Hey everybody, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo episode 108, and I'm finally reunited with the rest of the crew. This is Jonathan Metz, contributing editor. I'm here with James Jones, feature editor.
Hello.
Greg Lay, UK correspondent.
Hoi hoi.
John Lindemann, reviews editor.
Welcome back, Johnny.
Thank you. And Billy Berghammer, founder of NintendoWorldReport.com and currently a freelance journalist.
Yep, gun for hire. Hello.
Gun for hire. And Billy, tell us where we can read your wonderful musings these days.
Let's see. Just recently did some stuff for 1UP. You can see a really good interview with Ryan Payton. At least I think it's really good. It's extremely long. So if you're a Metal Gear person, you should definitely check that out. I'm doing a lot of stuff for a new website called Crispy Gamer, which I don't know if
which has my favorite review of MGS4, although not the one you wrote, but Tom Chick's.
You're crazy. Anyway,
dude, that was so funny. It's so funny.
Yeah, he totally went all shitfest on that game. But anyway,
He went ape shit on that game. If you're someone who's a little skeptical of the whole MGS fanboyism, like Billy emits, then you should go see Tom Chick's review of MGS4 on Crispy Gamer, because it's really funny.
Yeah.
Does he like movies?
I think he gave it like a thumbs down. Like their review system is like, what, try it,
buy it,
or fry it?
Yep, and he fried it.
And he said fry it. He's like, throw that shit in the microwave and light it up.
So I wrote a dissenting opinion about my thoughts about the game, because, you know, I think I understand Metal Gear a little bit, so...
Yeah, you had to give your token jizz fest on Kojima's tits.
Dude, Metal Gear fucking rules, all right?
Wow.
So deal with it. Anyway, and then you can also see my stuff on Complex has a new game blog called Das Gamer. Very German. It's more entertainment.
Oh,
it's,
I thought you meant DOS.
No, not yeah, like DOS Gamer. Yeah.
Das Boot.
Sweet. Oh. Jeez. Yeah, I've got a couple of features on how to create a boot disk to play Myst. It's very exciting. But, DAS Gamer. And I've done a few things for them, too. So you'll be seeing my stuff a lot more places probably in the next coming months. So stay tuned for that. And hopefully I won't, you know, go broke and end up in the gutter soon. So anyway.
There you go. Well, before we jump into new business, and part of the reason Billy wanted to be on the show and I wanted Billy to be on the show is just so we can hear about some different games that we don't hear about as much, and then in part two where we kind of finally totally ultimately wrap up E3 and never to talk about it ever again, and we just repress that memory, I wanted to have Billy talk about some of the stuff for other systems, which he was a lot more exposed to at the show than I was and the rest of the RF of the NWR crew was at the show. So we'll get to hear some cool stuff from him. But first I just wanted to say that we had a lot of fun doing the E3 series of podcasts, and I hope you all had a good time listening to those. And I just caught up on episode 107. I didn't have a very big window of time to listen to it before we record this, but I really enjoyed that. It was probably twice as long as it should have been, but I've been guilty of that in the past too. But these guys did a great job too, and I especially want to give a big shout out to the home team for everything they did. And to answer James's criticism on the last episode, we actually were working really hard at the show, and in fact we were working so hard that we didn't have time to write. And I don't say that jokingly. If you think back in the past, what we've done at E3 is we've usually taken between 12 and 20 people to the show. And so we would have people taking rotations in the media room, so we would always have a computer in there reserved for us, and you'd take like a 1 hour shift in there, and that would give you time to write about whatever you played right before that. And people were eager to take those slots because it gave you an hour to sit out, get some rest, and get some of that stuff out of your head. And then there would also be writing at the hotel afterwards usually, or we'd go to an internet cafe. And none of that was feasible this year because we had such a small crew. So we basically all went to the same meetings, and then once we got there, we divided up so we could play all the games, because we'd go to a meeting, we'd have 30 minutes to play 6 games. And so we would just divide up the 3 of us, or the 4 of us, the day TYP was there, and we just played games all day. And so then by the time we drove an hour and a half, 2 hours to get back to Wendy's house after the show through crazy traffic and stuff, or we went to some Activision press conference late at night, there just wasn't time to write when we got home. So literally the only time we had, once we actually got back from the show, we had about an hour or 2 hours before we just absolutely had to go to sleep, and we spent that time recording the podcast. So that was our production for the week, and what I can say is now that we're back, we are writing like crazy. I wrote like 4 impressions yesterday and put up a press kit, and I've written like 3 or 4 more today, so we're just writing like crazy. And so if you want to get all our impressions of all the E3 games, read the site this week, next week, because that stuff will be coming out gradually over time as we get caught up on everything.
Well, Nintendo only had like 3 games there, so
that's about to say, in my defense, yeah. What games were you playing?
Well, we're pretty much already done all the Nintendo game covers that we're going to do. I think those impressions are already up on the site as of Monday of the week that you're probably listening to this. But yesterday I wrote about like Madden and Tiger Woods. Today I'm writing about Deadly Creatures and Retro Game Challenge and stuff like that. So it's just a lot of third-party stuff, DS stuff, a lot of Wii stuff. And then we'll be doing a lot of previews too. There were games like Rock Band 2 that we got to play but not on the Wii, so we can't really do hands-on impressions of them, but we have a lot of information about those that we'll be writing up in previews. So, I mean, we played games nonstop for 3 days, so we do have a lot to write about.
Dude, E3 will just kick
from Nintendo's booth.
E3 is like...
It really will. It's brutal.
It's tough, man, so...
It's even tougher when you have a smaller crew there, you know, and each person is responsible for more, and there really is no downtime.
There was only enough downtime to snipe the news story, which spawned that whole discussion. Yeah,
what do you mean?
Greg and I were involved in the story about Pikmin and running it through the proper channels, only to have it appear on the site like right after we posted it.
Oh yeah. Well, I think the way that it happened was Wendy and I were actually in the, and Billy was there too. He sat in the row in front of me, and we were there. Although Billy left before the Pikmin part came out because he had to go see The Who or something. But we were there when he said that. And so as soon as we left, I rode back with TYP and to Wendy's house, and Chiron rode back with Wendy. And I called Chiron and basically told him to write up the Pikmin news on Wendy's iPhone while he was in the car.
Nice.
Because that was the only way we had of getting it up. You know, we left immediately, and we wanted to get that news story up. So he was basically, he probably spent 20, 30 minutes typing that shit out on an iPhone
keyboard.
It was like 18
words long.
So give him some respect. That's not easy to do.
Speaking,
but that's why it happened. We wanted to get it taken care of as quickly as possible.
Did Wendy get Carl's text messages for questions he was supposed to ask?
I don't know. We got a couple from Obi asking, like...
Oh, God. He was in on it, too.
Asking something about where the hardcore games...
And yeah, yeah.
The problem is that the Q&As, and Nintendo's really good about... They're really bad about this, I should say, is when they do these roundtable Q&As, they're always really limited to specific topics. And there's really... It's kind of... the way it's set up, it's actually pretty inappropriate to ask, like, a random question like that, because they have sitting up there the producer of this game that they just showed, Animal Crossing, and you're expected to ask about Animal Crossing. You know, and people... If Miyamoto's there, people will tend to ask off-topic questions because they assume Miyamoto knows everything that's going on at Nintendo, and he will talk about it. And a lot of times people... And this has happened to me, too. I've been at these press conferences where I've asked, like, where's the next Mario game? And basically the PR people will reprimand you for it, and he's not really going to answer your question. So you pretty much have to ask about the games they are showing, and the games they showed at that roundtable were the same games they showed at the press conference.
It
wasn't the most exciting event.
If that's the only questions you got, then I'm pleased, because the examples that they gave me after they told me they had something important to ask Wendy were frightening.
Yeah, I mean, I asked about, in Wii Sports, I asked what exactly is the technology in the Motion Plus that's allowing you to do this one-to-one motion, and they told us about the MEMS gyroscopes that measure the rotation and the angle of rotation, and the speed of rotation. And then I asked, are they concerned that Wii Sports Resort won't be as much of a multiplayer game as Wii Sports was, because this thing only comes with one of this attachment that you need to play the game. And they said they are concerned about that, and they're making some of the games multiplayer with only one controller, like basically like bowling was for Wii Sports.
Well, it's going to work without that thing.
You can play. No, it's not.
Really?
No, it's not.
That's surprising. Yeah.
I doubt there will be any part of Wii Sports Resort that you can play without.
No, because the entire game was just built to feature it, really.
Right.
I mean, just from watching videos of people making fools of themselves on the Nintendo stage, that was pretty apparent.
That's the most retarded thing ever. Honestly, like,
I figured they'd have it as an option.
The entire press conference was the most retarded thing ever.
I think it's very risky, but let's not get into that right now. Let's jump into new business, and I want to hear about some games that some non-E3 games, and we'll start with Billy since he's our special guest. So what you been playing?
Well, if you would have seen on my Facebook today, I started playing WoW again last night.
I don't know why.
But like, I cut myself off. I was actually really clean for a while, and then one of my friends was trying set me up with this girl on Saturday night that I was at this party or whatever, and it came up like, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I write about games, blah blah blah. And she's like, oh, I play World of Warcraft. And I was like, no shit. So like, we talked for like,
did you get back into WoW
back
for
in.
A girl?
2 hours. No, I was just kind of like bored last night. It was like 1 a.m. and like,
I smoked crack.
I was sick of looking
really?
At like oldie.
Maybe I should smoke crack too, so you'll like me.
I don't know. I need help, but whatever. So I started playing.
Intervention.
I'm playing the new Madden actually on 360, and
the new one.
Yeah, I've got.
Oh, you have a build.
I've got debugs and stuff. So.
Okay.
So I've been playing that for a while, and that's a lot of fun. I'm a huge Packer fan, so I took Aaron Rodgers out like immediately and threw Brett Favre back in.
nice.
Well done.
Because screw that guy. And then I'm a huge Packer fan, so. Deal with it. So, let's see what else. I'm looking at my stack of games that I've been playing.
So, in the new Madden, is Favre on the bench or what?
Favre?
How do they deal with that? Or is he a free agent?
He's like a superstar. Like, there's like a grouping of like old legends, or it's not really legends, but they're like superstars. And so, you reactivate them. And then you can actually pick which team he's on.
So, it's pretty realistic.
Well, at this point, yeah, which is kind of funny. And actually, if you keep an eye on my my stuff in the next week or so, I interviewed Peter Moore during E3 and asked him about like if they had like a contingency plan or something like that in case like you know Favre goes and plays for like you know whoever the Steelers or you know where I mean he's not going to go in there obviously, but
where's that interview going to appear?
I'm not sure yet. I'm still still figuring it out. So.
Google it.
It's gonna be a lot of fun, and so Madden's cool. I like this year's Madden. Not my first Sony crap that EA is doing for the Wii, but like actually the next gen one. So I have some big issues with that all play shit. So
I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
I've got impressions up on the site, and I kind of talked about like this is sort of what I need.
Oh, I tried the I've,
to play Madden.
I've got NCAA
it
right
felt
now.
To me.
And
it kind of felt to me like NFL Blitz, and that was the last football game that I actually had fun with.
Yeah,
like the N64 one. So
yeah.
You know, 10 years ago.
But I've got the NCAA one for the All Play, and I think it looks like a really crappy PS2 game. And you know, I played it for a little bit, and like I get it, but you know, I guess I already have a 360 and a PS3, so you know, and I'm also you know, a guy, not like a 4-year-old kid that doesn't know how to play football. So, the all play thing just makes me want to puke. But whatever.
John, brother.
And then let's see what else I've been playing. Battlefield, Bad Company, which is a lot of fun. I just started playing Mass Effect.
Blowing off some walls. Yeah.
Started playing Mass Effect because I hadn't. Played that back when it came out, so it tossed that in.
Are you playing the PC version?
No, I'm playing the 360 one.
But the PC was supposed to be better.
What?
I mean, if you waited until now, why not get the one that's more refined?
Because
you know?
I already had it.
Oh, you already owned it on 360, you just hadn't played it
right,
yet.
Right. So it was in like a stack of backlog games. So And I think the last game I'm playing is Team Fortress 2. Still playing the hell out of that. It's awesome.
We gotta link up on that.
Absolutely.
Actually, I gotta add you to the Nintendo World Report group on Steam.
Oh yeah, totally. Do that for sure.
Yeah, and if anybody listening wants to be on that, if you use Steam and you play TF2 or
too bad.
Stuff like that, no, send us an email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com and we'll invite you to the group. Or I think you can just go to Steam and search for it because it's a public group.
And then we'll shoot you in the face.
Yeah,
in the face.
Yeah, for real.
So, yeah, that's all I'm playing.
Cool.
Which is a lot.
Well, all right, James.
Well,
next.
I actually took a relatively long break given the fact it was E3 from video games, but I got back into it with the purchase of a 360 last week, and I've been playing Call of Duty 4 for about 3 days now.
Nice.
Are you obsessed?
I hacked through the single player game in about 12 hours straight.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's kind of a lot to do for 12 hours. Because afterwards, you put the controller down, you look up, and you go, God, it's been 3 hours. But I'm okay. You know, just go back to playing it.
I saw the first level or two of that on during E3. Steven Wendy drove me over to Adam Contras' house. Adam used to work for our site, and he actually edited the famous E3 DVD that we did back in 2002.
All right.
And he's in TV production now. But his house... in LA has the most ridiculous projection I've ever seen. Like, instead of a TV, he just has this 128-inch...
That's awesome.
...rectangle on his wall that he's painted white and put a black border around it, and he has, like, this ridiculously expensive LCD projector, and it's fucking gorgeous.
Yeah.
Basically, he spent 2 hours showing it off to me. Like, he has the stack of things that he... uses to demo it to people when they come over. You know, it's
That's
like the sizzle
awesome.
Reel. And we played Call of Duty 4 on it and went through the little training and then went on, I guess, the first level on the tanker where it's all swaying from side
mission.
To side. And
yes.
My jaw dropped. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be one of the first games I get.
That game is absolutely intense.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
And
I was really impressed by it.
I've played a lot of the Call of Duty games. And when they first were pitching this game, they were talking about how they... wanted to put variety into it, which is kind of a scary phrase if you play a lot of first-person shooters. You hear variety, you just go, oh, shit.
Mini games. If it was for Wii, people would say, oh, yeah, mini games.
That would be... That'd actually be the main game. The shooting would be the mini game.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's one level, I think it's called, like, Death from Above, where you're in control of an AC-130 gunship's cannons. I have played that level, like, 30 times. It doesn't,
just because you love it so much, or because
it's
so hard?
It's just really fun. I mean,
it doesn't
get very hard after like the third time because you realize where all are going to come from, and you're basically invincible on that level as long as you don't screw it up. But it's just, you know, it's just funny to watch. The entire game for that level is in heat visor vision or mode or whatever, heat cameras. So you're just firing up from the sky these little white dots running around. And you just hear the people on the airplane talking to you as you do it, saying these rather nonchalant things like "kaboom" after you've dropped a mortar on 50 people.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what you think of the multiplayer mode.
Yeah,
maybe I'll be playing that with you soon.
Yep, I'm gonna do online. I think I'm gonna try going on tonight. I just got the 360 hooked up into the network. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of demos on live. I mean, there are.
Have you played the 2 Human demo?
No, I'm actually going to start downloading that probably tonight after I go to bed.
Yeah, it's up there, and I think it's exactly the same as the E3 demo, which I did play for a few minutes. And
I've heard that the camera angle is weird. Like, people, like, I know at least one of my friends was complaining that the camera angle was really bizarre for a video game.
I sunk about 20 hours into the preview build a couple weeks ago, and I mean, it's Silicon Knights camera, so it does what it wants to do, and it's actually not... I didn't have a problem with the camera. That's not what I had issues with that game with, but anyway, go ahead.
So what were your
what
issues?
Were your issues? Or
are you allowed to say?
It's all in my preview that I wrote. I mean, they said it was a really early build, and you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and sometimes it is really an early build, or it actually just sucks, and they're just telling you it's an early build. So I haven't seen, you know, and I'm not saying that the game sucks by any means. Like, I did have a good time playing it co-op, but single player wise, like, I don't know. It kind of reminded me of playing, like, I don't know if you guys played Phantasy Star Online at all, but, like, if you ever played PSO by yourself, it's not very fun.
But man,
cooperatively, it was, like, it's a total blast. So I played co-op with somebody from Silicon Knights for, like, 2 hours, and I really enjoyed it in co-op. Like, it's got a lot of, like, I mean, it's got, like, the whole mad loots thing, kind of like from World of Warcraft. So, like, you know, you upgrade your shit all the time, and there's loot everywhere, and but you do it at a really fast pace, and that's a lot of fun. And there's actually, like, challenge areas that you can, like, secret areas that you go that are, like, basically, like, remember in Castlevania where you'd play, like, the ladder area where you, like, just keep getting harder and harder and harder shit? Well, it's kind of like that, and you just get, like, more and more difficult enemies, and the more you progress, if you finish it, you'll get, like, an epic piece, which is, like, kind of like crap from WoW. So, I don't know, I actually like that, but, you know, the graphics were not as top-notch as I really had hoped they would be, but, I mean, you know, not to, like, make any excuses for Silicon Knights, but, I mean, that game's been through so much shit, you know, from, like, you know, being shown too early to having to switch engines completely halfway through development. I mean, that's...
Well, that was more like 8/10 of the way through development.
Yeah, and then...
Yeah.
And then Microsoft, you know, and you know Microsoft is just crawling up their ass right now to get that game out, so...
Yeah.
I mean, you know...
And it has a firm release date now.
Yeah.
But...
That's next month.
I don't know, I mean,
no,
you know,
it's
I heard Dennis on One Up Yours kind of complaining that people like Chris Kohler essentially reviewed the game, you know, even though that what they were given was called a preview build, but it is the complete game. I mean, you can play the game from start to finish and see the ending, right?
Yeah, and a lot of people did that.
So, I mean, it's complete, maybe not as polished as they would like, but, I mean, you got to imagine there's not going to be any massive differences between...
Well,
what you have and what's coming out later. And you know, he goes back and, you know, this goes back to, like, his comparison with how movies are previewed and how games are previewed. And he's like, you know, you don't show a movie before it's finished. And it's like, well Dennis...
Why show the game?
I mean, you know, sometimes... Here's the deal. Sometimes they do show movies at, say, Sundance that aren't the final cut. And based on the reaction from Sundance, they'll go back and make some minor changes. But people do review movies that they see at Sundance.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's part of the industry. It's like, if you're going to give a version of the game out to people and it's complete, they're going to review it. I mean, they may not call it a review, but they're basically going to give their final judgment on it. And what they're going to do when you give them the final review copy is say, well, it's pretty much what I said before, except with this one little minor difference, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, what do you expect when you give people the whole game 3 months early? They're going
to
review it.
I love Dennis to death, and it's not saying reviewing it, per se. Like, my opinion is, like, I mean, in people's previews, it's not all supposed to be roses and, like, fluffy clouds and shit. You're supposed to, like, I mean, I give my opinion in there. It's not, my opinion is not a review. I didn't put a numbered score on it. It just was like, this is the shit that I think that needed to be fixed. This is what needs to be tweaked. This is what I liked. You know, that's not a review. That's just like, this is the state of the game of where it's at. And if Dennis wants to call, and I think that's all Kohler did, really, because I read his thing, because I was playing it too. And so I, you know, I was curious to what Chris had to say. And, like, I don't know. I don't think he reviewed it. It's just offering an opinion. I mean, previews are not supposed to be bullshit. You know, that's what press releases are for, in fact sheets, you know, like, you know, I don't know. I think it's just fine in a preview to say, like, these are the good qualities of this game and these are the bad qualities of this game, and this is what still needs to be fixed. As long as you say that this is not a final build, then whatever. So anyway, this is total.
Yeah, but a lot of publishers believe that previews should be either all factual or all positive.
Yeah, well, all
and,
publishers.
You know, that's why EGM is in a lot of trouble with companies like Ubisoft, because they've said some things in their previews that are pretty opinionated. And, you know, we do hands-on impressions that are opinionated, basically opinionated previews. We separate the facts from the opinion. But, you know, if more publishers actually paid attention to our site, they might get upset too. And occasionally they have.
If only I could get such emails.
Yeah. Occasionally they do get upset. They're like, we think previews should be positive and optimistic about the game. And we're like, well, you know, we're going to say what we think is wrong with it and needs to be fixed.
But at the same time, you do have to show some reserve in it. You can't just be like, go hard on it like I went on games we review.
Right, obviously.
Yeah. You can't just
But a lot of publishers don't think you should say anything negative whatsoever about a game before it's finished. And it's like, well, then don't show it to us.
Well, you can extend the same thing to when publishers get upset when people dissect screenshots they released in early builds of games. I mean, Ubisoft had a conniption.
This is what you chose to show us.
They had a conniption.
So choose better.
Destroyed that DS Prince of Persia game screenshot.
I don't think they were angry. Did you read anywhere where they had like a really negative reaction?
They kept going. This is an early screenshot. You can't base your opinion of the game on this.
Are you reading their corporate forums now?
No, actually, somebody else pointed this out to me.
Okay, because I mean, we mentioned that screenshot to the guy who demoed it.
We did a psychological evaluation of myself through that game screenshot.
Right. Yes, your own inadequacies and personal failings. But,
yeah.
I mean, as I said last week, that game actually looks really damn good.
Really?
So it's just it does. Yeah, you should actually listen to the podcast that we put out last week. It actually looks excellent in motion, and even you could take a lot of really beautiful screenshots of that game. They just didn't. And the guy demoing it, he's actually working on the game in I think Montreal. And he was like, yeah, that screenshot, I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, he was embarrassed by it. You know, he knew it was a really bad screenshot. So.
But see...
That somebody at corporate thought it was a good idea to put that out there, and they were very, very wrong. And we're going to pounce on it because that's all we've got to go on.
And they released one screenshot, and it was that one.
Yeah. That game, see that game, you'll be impressed. Really.
I mean, the thing is, someone gets paid to put that out there. So, I mean, that's their fault.
Yeah.
You know, so, they should be put that up.
I mean, as long as what the person is saying is somewhat grounded in truth, I have a hard time believing that any time that you write your opinion on something, unless you're just completely lying, that the publishers really have much of a ground to critique you.
Greg, are you still here?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Hi.
I'm listening attentively.
We should probably move on a little bit. James, have you played anything other than Call of Duty 4 on your 360 yet? Have you played any Nintendo games?
Well, I've played some demos on the 360 that 360 apparently decided I would like based on some crazy matrix, based only on the fact I've played one game, which it decided that it was going to download these demos overnight.
Which automatically?
It seems to have, because there were four.
That's weird.
There were four or five on there when I got it, and then there were like nine when I turned it on this afternoon.
If you just bought your 360, it does come with some demos, and then I think there is a feature that has like automatic downloading, so it's kind of like TiVo, where like, you know, if you liked like Avatar, then it would download some other bullshit, you know. But like, you know, like
if you played Avatar for achievement points
for the 3 minutes, or for the 30 seconds that it takes to get those achievements.
I never understood that. I mean,
because there's people that are idiots.
So James, are you addicted to achievements yet?
No,
I don't understand. Like, why would you play a crappy game to get achievement points? Why would you want achievement points in a crappy game? Why would you waste your time? I've never understood that.
Yeah, I think.
Why would you play WoW for 3 years? I don't know either. These things don't make any sense to me.
I think the achievements were kind of well done from what I've seen in Call of Duty 4. You know, you'd get like 10 for completing a level. You'd get like 30 for, you know, a real-time event that you intervened in that you didn't have to complete the game. Like,
I think they're a fun addition to games that you own. I guess I'm with John. I don't understand seeking them out in games that you would not otherwise play.
But I mean, if
you're
an achievement whore, I could totally see doing Avatar, because wasn't it like the full game in 3 minutes?
Right. I think the whole story of that kind of game being played for achievements basically comes from Gamefly. Because people can rent games for essentially nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, sorry. It doesn't really cost them anything to do that. So they play it for 5 minutes, they stick it right back in the mail, and they get the next one. If you can have two discs at a time, then you can do that and still be playing a game for
actually like. I also, in the middle of my splurge, bought No More Heroes, finally. But I haven't actually gotten to play more than, like, the first few minutes. And all I can say so far is that game is weird.
It's not going to get any less weird.
Oh, I know that much. I think that just the weirdness. It's been a long time since I've played Killer 7. And I think the weirdness got me again. So
I'm still waiting for my to borrow Killer 7 from Carl. He still hasn't sent it.
Dude,
I would like to play it.
You could probably get it for like $5 online.
Yeah, that would require money.
Oh.
So
yeah, it's a pretty Killer 7's a pretty intense game. And this is, seems to be pretty not quite as intense but much weirder.
Well, Suda is a trip, man.
Yeah, I'm really kind of scared of what's going to come out of his foray into
Fatal Frame. I mean,
yeah.
He's involved with Fatal Frame.
That's
and
what I'm
that game
about.
Is I mean, I would assume I've never played the series, but it seems trippy enough already. You're taking pictures of ghosts and the ghosts are doing things to creep you out, so I'm really interested to see what his influence is on that.
That's going to be weird. That's going to be a rough game to play.
All right. Well, we'll move on, and I'm next up, and I'm going to be pretty quick here. While I was at E3, I was looking through Wendy's GBA game collection, and I noticed Astro Boy in his case. The Omega Factor, the game that Treasure made.
Nice.
And I'd always heard really good things about this, and I was like, hey, man, can I borrow this sometime? And TYP was standing there, and he's like, yes, you can. That's actually my copy, and he's had it for 2 years and still hasn't played it.
That's
so
awesome.
I just pulled it out of Wendy's case and stuck it in mine, and I played it on the plane back. I've been playing it ever since, and it's really fun. It's difficult.
Yeah.
I'm playing it on the medium setting, and it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
But you find certain moves you can exploit pretty well, and you eventually learn how to deal with certain things. You learn to jet through, because when you're jetting, you're invincible, so you use that to get through crazy stuff. But it's a really fun game, and the interesting thing is, it's not a super long game. It's a treasure action game. They tend to be, only take a few hours to get through. But once you get to the end, it goes through this New Game Plus thing, and basically it asks you to play the entire game over again, but the story is different, and the story's pretty crazy to begin with. It's even weirder going back through it, and, like, he's already seen the future, so...
Yeah.
He already knows the characters when they first meets him, and
that's
but
trippy.
Then the rest of their conversation is the same. It's just really strange, and you can get extra upgrades. Some of the levels are different. Some of the bosses are more difficult the second time through, and you're kind of compounding upgrades. So you're even more powerful, and it's fun enough that I'm happy to play through it twice in a row. Basically, is what I'm saying. So that's been a lot of fun. When we went to EA's press conference. The day before E3 started, everybody who registered at the desk got a free copy of Spore Creature Creator on CD. This is like the retail copy, basically. So I finally installed that yesterday, and I only played it for a few minutes, but to me, it's a neat little tool, but it's not something I could play for hours and hours. I mean, I made one creature that had like two mouths and pranced around a little bit when you clicked on its attack or whatever, but it wasn't that much fun.
Yeah, but you know what the feature, the reason why there's that creature creator, though? It's because it's to populate the world before the game comes out.
Outside of the fact
to make, your little booger with legs that, like, hurts things.
Yeah. I find it, and James talked about this a few weeks ago, I find it amazing that people are paying $10 for this.
Yeah, it's
because this kind of tool, honestly, could have been done within a web browser. You're dragging parts over there, and it's just attaching them. I've seen stuff like this.
It would have been
a
pretty high-end web browser development, though.
Yeah, no shit.
I don't know. I mean, if you can run Quake 3 in a browser, I think you could run this creature creator thing. It's just not really doing anything, And it just reminds me of this. There was a game called, like, Monster Island or something for GameCube that I reviewed. And it was pretty much the same thing, it gave you this basically a spine, you attached arms and legs and drew a mouth on it and eyeballs, and then you could actually go play like little mini games with your creatures. So, I mean, most of the game was the creature creator, and it was fun, and I thought it was just as good as this.
That was
a full price game a few years ago. But I just this isn't like all that revolutionary to me.
So you should mess around with like the spinal cord stuff, and like, I mean, you can really Like, I actually dicked around with it last night for a while and made Louis the Cat in my, you know, in as a spore creature, or at least try
That's
to make
horrifying.
Him. And, well, it looks like a retarded dinosaur, actually, which I feel really
That's
bad.
Actually less horrifying than the original option.
Because, like, Louis, like, sitting right next to me. But, I mean, there's a lot more going on than just, like, you know, just popping eyes on there. I mean, this is like, these are creatures that are going to be inhabiting planets that are going to be in the game. And not only that, but they've got, like, tendencies to, like, every single different part, like, if you get certain teeth, like, it's going to show, like, what kind of, like, food, you know, herbivore, carnivore.
Yeah,
like,
but none of that,
that kind
none
of
that,
shit.
That's all out of context in the creature creator. Like, you can see those attributes, but they don't mean anything because you're not actually playing a game.
Yeah, but those, so that's the same thing, that's the same exact editor that's going to be in the shipping version of the
game. That's why
I know, I just don't understand releasing it separately. I mean, I understand that they want to populate the worlds or whatever. I don't understand why somebody would play this now.
But couldn't they have done
that
with
not,
the free
It's
demo
not really
anyway?
That much fun on its own. I totally can understand how it's an integral part of Spore itself, and I think it'll be more interesting to play with this thing once you can actually experience the results,
right.
You can actually see the creature you make evolve and go out and create a civilization and whatever. That'll be a lot of fun, but just to make a creature and then it just sits there and scratches its ass is not interesting to
never,
me at all.
I've never experienced them scratching their ass, but okay.
I mean, I'm probably going to uninstall it tonight. I just don't think I could play it again.
It's also a free it's also a free download. We got the retail. You can also download
it,
too.
Yeah,
well,
the download...
It's not free, though.
Well,
it's $10.
There is a download that's free, but you only get access to, like, 4 mouse, 4 eyes, 4 feet, 4 hands.
Yeah, like, what we got is the full version, which is $10, and I just don't think it's worth $10.
See,
I
honestly
really
think the full version should have been what they released for free. And they could have put, like, a time restriction on it. You can only play it for X number of hours.
Yeah.
And they could have populated the world that way, but instead...
What EA is saying is, pay us $10 to do our work for us and populate our game with creatures.
But see, the problem with what they're with doing it this way is that the majority of people who played it with the free demo, which has a very limited number of pieces you can use, which means that you're going to wind up with, like, a bunch of planets populated by characters who can only have, like, 4 factorial number of parts they could be using versus the real game, which has hundreds.
Okay, you just said the word factorial, so...
Yes.
I'm going to move on to the next game. That is Biomiracle Bokuta Upa. And,
the baby game.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
What?
This was...
eating games.
I got to tell you the story of how I got this game, because it's funny. I did not pay for this game. I was surfing around on, like, the Nintendo channel or something on Wendy's Wii last week. And I noticed, well, I must have been on the shopping channel. Actually, it was Monday. We were checking to see what the new games were Monday morning while we waited for Microsoft's press conference to start. And I noticed he had, like, 4,300 Wii points or something.
Yeah, he got a bunch of them from Power.
Yeah, he was saying Nintendo had just sent him, like, 2 cards worth of points, basically, so that we could do Virtual Console reviews and WiiWare reviews and stuff like that. And I was like... Wow, with all these points, I should give something to myself.
Give something to the faithful staff.
Yeah, so I just went to Virtual Console and, like, searched through there for something that looked decent that I didn't already have that I could write about. And that was the first thing I found. And I was like, we haven't written about this, have we? He's like, no. I'm like, I'm going to gift it to myself. So I did. And I've been playing it since I got home. My Wii was all lit up when I got home from E3. I was like, oh, Wendy sent me a present. And I open it up, and the message says, Johnny, you're my hero, which I typed, of course.
Nice.
But anyway, so this is like the NES platformer, or it was originally Famicom platformer. It's an import game. But... you play as this baby, and you jump around and shake your rattle to inflate enemies, like sort of like Dig Dug, and then you can, like, push them around or float on them.
Yes.
And yes. There's not much else to say about it. I mean, that's pretty much the game. The level designs are pretty good. It's really difficult. I mean, this game may star a baby, but it's not for babies. It's actually hard.
This game's not for babies.
Right.
It's for hardcore gamers.
This is a grown-up game.
This game, real.
Yes.
The funny thing is, you just said there's not a lot to say about this game, but I distinctly remember us going on like a 20-minute tear about this game just from pictures we had of it.
Well, it's not bad. It's not great either. I mean, I'm recommending it for fans. Like, if you like...
For fans,
you know,
of what?
Fans of NES, like 2D 8-bit platformers, you know?
Oh, okay.
Like, if you're really into stuff like that, you know, like if, you know, MC Kids or Mario 3... You know, stuff like that. Then you'll probably enjoy this.
If you like,
I think you'd have to be a pretty serious fan of that genre to pay, you know, an extra dollar for what is a pretty standard, average game of that type.
Dude, there's nothing average about that game.
No, it really is. I mean, other than the fact that you're playing as a baby, it's
a giant land populated by cakes with a rattle.
I think MC Kids is actually a much more interesting game. I hope that comes one day to Virtual Console. But that's the last game I've been playing lately. But I did want to mention here at the end of my segment that I ordered an Xbox 360 from Amazon along with GTA 4, and it shipped out today. So by the end of this week, I will have a 360. And a lot of my friends have been kind of shocked about this when they saw it. And
Get a choice, Johnny.
I know. Well, a lot of people, like five people already have asked me, like, is this because of Nintendo's E3 showing? And I said, well, honestly, that was a factor, but a pretty small factor, because I was already thinking about this. I mean, I've been thinking about this basically since the whole stimulus package was announced. And I got mine like a month ago, but I had to put it towards my credit card right away. But things have settled down now that my traveling is over. And
I
was waiting for the price cut, which did happen. It's a temporary price cut, but I'm like, well,
right.
I'm getting in on that shit before they're all gone.
Which,
and
fair warning to
you,
our
know,
listeners.
And Final Fantasy 13 announcement helped too,
because
I'm a big Final Fantasy fan, and I didn't want to miss out on that. So that was kind of making me wait and see what happened. But with that announcement, it made me feel a little better about going ahead and getting this and not worrying about a PS3. So.
Well, I should point out to the listeners
shit's
that
in the mail.
It is a temporary price cut, and not only that, it's based on however many 20 gigs are left at the store. And
right,
the place I bought it from, I got the last 20 gig they had.
Well, that's why I went to Amazon, because I knew if they have them, you know, that's just, I don't have to deal with all that.
Yeah.
You know, I can get free shipping, and I don't have to pay sales tax, which on $360 worth of stuff, sales tax is pretty significant, so... You know, I kind of got out of that too, so I actually saved some money.
Just fair warning, don't wait for it.
What do you mean, don't wait for it?
Don't wait if you're planning on buying one, because there might not be any left.
Oh, yeah. If you want the $300 with a hard... I mean, I've said for 2 years, I've said I'll get a 360 when it's $300 with a hard drive. Because for me, that was the limit of reasonability, of ration.
Yeah.
Of rationality. Was, you know, I'm not paying more than $300 to get a non-GIMPed 360.
Well,
and so once they announced this, you know, fire sale, I was like, well, now's my chance.
Yeah, the funny thing is... Go ahead, John.
I mean, a 20-gig hard drive is perfectly fine for most... I mean, unless you're downloading a whole bunch of stuff off Xbox Live...
I'm not going to be downloading
you'll
movies
be fine.
And shit. Yeah, I have Netflix for that, so I'm not
going
to be running
thing,
HD
Now, what does what
crap.
Does fill it up, Johnny, is Rock Band. Rock Band fills it up pretty nicely.
Does it?
Well... I am not planning to get Rock Band 1. I might get Rock Band 2 for 360, but if I do, it's not going to be for a while, because my first next music game purchase will be Guitar Hero World Tour for Wii.
Yeah.
So I'm not convinced that I'm going to get Rock Band 2 for 360, but why?
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Well, I've already got Guitar Hero 3 for Wii, which is probably the best version. Despite the lack of DLC, there wasn't that much DLC for Guitar Hero 3 anyway.
Right.
But the controller is probably the best, and so I've already got the controller, and the Wii version of World Tour is going to be exactly the same as the 360 PS3 version. So you're not losing anything by getting it on Wii. So I might as well get it for that, and then I'll have two controllers.
I still want to see how that DLC system is going to work out, because I just fear that could be, you know. Yes, but you're going to have to move every single download to an SD card. And you're going to have to move it back off to
you. No, you don't have to move it back off the SD card. The game, they've already said you can create a playlist when you're playing the game off of the songs that are on your SD card. So the, in other words, the game loads the songs from your SD card. You don't have to go in the memory manager and shift things around.
So in other words,
there's no fridge cleaning. You download it directly to the SD card and you play it directly off the SD card the way it fucking should be.
Another game has finally caught up to the greatest game ever on the Wii, Excitruck.
Excitruck.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Congratulations, someone has finally caught Excitruck.
Yep. So anyway, that's my new business. And Greg, can we please hear your smooth voice? I mean,
yes, you can.
You've been unnaturally quiet. You must have something.
It's all this.
Not
a lot of Nintendo stuff, is there? Really, you know. And I am the last man standing at this point. So.
Oh, I guess. So.
Here I am in the Arctic wilds or whatever, just on my own. This wind, cold, coarse winds of 360 rasping around my ears. But the last couple of weeks I wrapped up Okami, which is very satisfying. I was very pleased with that. Very long.
It's a long game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a long game. It kind of, you know, it's quite interesting sort of structure in terms of it's you're quite different. There's three quite distinct parts to it. And
how many hours did that take for you to beat? So I'm playing through it right now. How many hours?
It was between 25, upwards of 25, rather, I should say.
Really? It took me over 40.
That's not bad. Really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ended up mucking around as much as I might have done. I mean, I may go back to it and just have a little sort of fun with it at some point. But yeah, I mean, he could have been closer to 30. But yeah, it was
Did you get the move where you can piss on your enemies?
Yeah, I did. I did get that one.
The one
did you get the
shit one? Because that one's really hard to get. I mean, it costs.
No,
like,
no, I didn't get that one. Just the leg cocking mockery that gets you the fangs that help you with buy stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but no. Overall, the game was very, very satisfying experience. So it was pretty much, I couldn't find fault with it apart from the odd excessive repetition of a boss fight, which I didn't really care for. Other than that, I thought it was a really solid game. Didn't have any.
You mean like when you defeat the Hydra like for the third time?
Yeah, that was. I didn't really. I thought that was one of the weaker boss fights. First time, I didn't really care for it that much. I don't think it was bad, but I mean, it once was enough, and then they got it three times, so that was kind of I would have preferred something new, or at least some sort of change up, like a riff on that boss fight, like start similarly, but then it changes or something. But it literally was the same as far as I can recall. Three times
over.
I
think he does extra damage, but it's
there has to be an because you
complaints I have about the game.
You accumulate more life and power, so it has to the ante has to be upped a bit. But yeah, I mean that was a wonderful game. I enjoyed that a great deal. I played plenty more Boom Blocks. I unlocked the Master Stat levels, which have got some really really fun things in there. Some great sort of chain reaction puzzles and stuff like that. So that's been a lot of fun. A bit more multiplayer as well. I haven't got a lot of multiplayer in until the last couple of weeks. And that's a blast. That's great fun. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
We played
some Boom Blocks at E3 at Wendy's place. And Chiron blames it for his arm hurting the entire week.
Well, cool, but I mean, especially if you go on a tear like of certain levels, like trying to beat like a record of this, that, the other. I mean, it can get quite fatiguing because, of course, you know, it uses a Wii Remote in the ways that the Wii Remote currently, unlike what it will do when you get the Motion Plus up, what it's good at in terms of you've got the pointer, obviously, for lining up the shots, and then it's just the velocity. You know, the accelerometers can detect velocity. So it really
you can throw a good hard throw just by flicking your wrist.
Yeah, it doesn't
exactly
need
the right
a
way,
huge arcing motion.
That's kind of the more difficult, advanced way to do it. Like the easy way to do it is just throw like a baseball as hard as you can.
Yeah,
and that will wear you out. I mean, and eventually you kind of learn to conserve your energy a little bit and do a more efficient motion. I think this was Chiron's first time playing the game, and so it's pretty common actually. I think for people when they're playing it for the first time to kind of overdo it.
So do you think that this game might benefit from the Wii Motion Plus?
No, because I think the thing, that's what I mean, in the sense that it was designed very much with the sort of constraints of the Wii's current motion sensing abilities in mind. It used what it does well now. Whereas, so what you don't have, so you have nuance in the sense that of the velocity of the ball, you know, because certain puzzles and more advanced ones will kind of demand that you actually take pace off the ball, so it'll just nudge a block rather than displace it entirely. And you can do that. You can take take the pace off, and then it'll just plop in there and do what you want. So you've got that nuance, but you know that's in there, but it doesn't try and overreach with any like gestural or any of this kind of stuff you see in other games. It's purely just the accelerometer. That's really it, and I think that's very clever. And for the game that it is, you know, with all about throwing stuff and physics, and all, it just works really great. Now, obviously, in the future of the Motion Plus, I guess what you could do is some of the more ambitious stuff better than we've seen. Because so far, you know, anything that's tried to get too advanced. I mean, it's kind of what Egbert was saying when he was talking about what he thought the Wii did well was a lot about the pointer. I think is that, you know, a lot of this gestural stuff is just too much. It's too complicated at the moment because it's not the sensing isn't nuanced enough. But Boom Blocks kind of bypassed that problem by just making it about the pointer and the accelerometer, and that was great. I really enjoy it. It's just because the great thing about it is just anybody can get into it. They really can, can't they? I mean, it's very quick to pick up.
If they'll
and
you can buy go, it.
Well, no, you don't. They don't have to buy it, do they? Because if they're around your house to start with. You know that then you can just say, take a look at this, and it looks it's quick as anything to get into. And the only complaint I had was trying to get. But I think Johnny registered this in his review, was just the whole way that co-op set up in terms of exactly the same as one player, in that you have to unlock everything piece by piece. And I kind of found that a bit unnecessary. The one player, in terms of, well, would have appreciated like more of a. Just choices accessible at one given time. Yeah. Like maybe just say, well, okay, you can play any of these five levels in any order, but you have to do all of them until you unlock the next, rather than literally one by one by one by one. I thought that was unnecessarily restrictive, and especially in a co-op setting, I just thought that was a bad idea.
I mean, we've talked a lot about how there are parts of the game that are really masterful and parts that are kind of lame and, you know, been there, done that in a lot of other Wii games. And the problem with the way that these modes are set up, the co-op and the single player, is that it kind of forces you to slog through the modes that you
like. Yes, exactly. Well, what I did, actually, is once I got to see some of the modes and think, oh, you know, this doesn't look like it'd be that much fun in co-op, but you can do it by sort of Wii remote passing, so I just did that by myself and just thought, well, the next time I get a friend round, then we'll actually get to the fun stuff straight away.
Yeah, but some of the co-op modes you play simultaneously.
Yeah, some of them you do, and we just get into that. But we also played the competitive stuff, and there's a good range there. There's lots of different kinds of games you can get into, and it's just... It's a lot of fun. It really is, and it's I think Carl on the board said it's one of the best social experiences you can have with Wii. Yeah, I can totally see that because it's just so natural.
I finally got a chance to play the Warlords type game. You know, where you're trying to knock down the other people's forts, and you have four people at a time. You just take turns. And Penny Arcade made a comic about it. But it's the first time that I had actually played that, even though I own the game, and we had a lot of fun with that. I think we were just playing three-player. Maybe we had all four with 2IP, but we played that for probably an hour. This was before E3 actually started.
Yeah, multiplayer is definitely a lot of fun, but the one player is good too. I mean, there's a lot of depth, there's a lot of content there. I mean, some of the things I don't like quite as much as others, obviously the shooting gallery stuff's kind of tangentially related to the rest of the game in some ways, but yeah, overall great package. Been enjoying it a lot, and I'm sure I'll be continuing to enjoy it. And the next thing I've been playing for the last while is a review copy, Final Fantasy Tactics A2, which has
finally got a good game.
Most of the games that I've reviewed have been pretty good. Yeah, the Hurry Up Hedgehog seems to have blackened the name of all the other games that I've reviewed. I mean, I didn't particularly care for Mario and Sonic at the Olympics for DS, but it wasn't bad. And then Mario Kart Wii and Pinball and all whatever Carl may say, which I don't really get that at all, is a very good game. So this is certainly fitting into the good side. It seems very good. Now, I should preface my remarks by saying that I have no prior experience with Final Fantasy at all, and I have no prior experience with tactical RPGs at all. So perhaps John,
you'd
like
so much trouble. How did you?
So John, would you
game?
Like to explain why I am reviewing this game?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, what we tend to always do is we always give games to people that just play the same games over and over again. So the thing is, I mean, it was part of the fact that really, like, none of the people that I thought would properly review it, because it's a good game, it's a pretty high profile title, so I wanted it to go to somebody that, you know, is a really good reviewer, can really write well and all that. And, you know, nobody, everybody else was occupied, and Greg was open. And if the only drawback to somebody reviewing a game is the fact that they haven't played every single game in the franchise, I don't really see that as a drawback, because they'll at least bring a fresh perspective to the game.
I actually agree, man.
You know, I mean, if somebody wants to pick it up that hasn't played it, I mean, not everybody out there has played every single game in the Final Fantasy Tactics franchise.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
All two of them?
Yeah.
I did play the last Tactics Advance on GBA, and you couldn't have paid me to review this one, really.
Yeah.
It's not that I hated the last one, but I probably played it for 40 hours before I felt comfortable writing a review, and it just really felt like I was working
it's
not even playing a game. It's just a grind. Yeah. It's very slow paced. The story is nonsense. It doesn't motivate you at all to keep playing.
The story is awesome.
The battles take 2 hours apiece. And the original Final Fantasy Tactics, I played for over 100 hours over the course of like 5 weekend rentals. And I mean, that's one of my favorite games ever. And for me, whatever they did with the story, with the gameplay, when they brought it to the GBA, it just didn't interest me anymore. It couldn't addict me like the original one did. So I was staying far away from A2. But I'm glad you're enjoying it, Greg.
Well, I'm enjoying it so far. I mean, my understanding is that it is rather more like the first one from some of the previews I've read, the GBA one, sorry, than the first one. Naturally enough, I suppose. In terms of the plot, it's like a school kid getting transported into the sort of Final Fantasy universe. So that's the same as the Advance one, I think, which I don't know whether that's to everyone's liking. And the plot itself generally seems like it's not that important to the game. I mean, the way it works, where you sort of choose like quests from a sort of quite abstract overworld map and stuff like that, it really doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel like a particularly plot-driven game. The only thing is that you kind of know the quests that are like more important, that they actually do advance the plot in some way. Whereas there's a whole bunch of quests that you can accept. That you purely just building up your levels and improving your the members of your clan, and I get that so far the battles haven't been too like cumbersomely long, because obviously that would be a real drawback in a handheld game.
Yeah, I think there's a quick save or something.
There is a quick save.
There were times when I would play 3 or 4 consecutive sessions and I'd be on the same battle the entire time. It just felt like I could, I'm never going to get through this battle and move on in the game. I just can't finish it in a reasonable play session, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So far, I mean, I haven't really encountered that, but I'm not that deep into the game. So I think just under about 10 hours in, although I probably put more into it than that. But 10 hours on the clock. Anyway,
As I understand it, the rule system is substantially better in this game than it was in the last.
Well, I'm just going from preview stuff that I've read before, but it's like I think it's slightly less restrictive in this. Yeah. Like, you know, the punishments for when you, because you have these the rule system is, you know, that something will place certain restrictions on what you can do in a battle. And then if you break those restrictions, there is a punishment, but it's not that your character is sort of banished like I think it used to be. Now it's kind of like you can't revive them. And there are, you know, obviously disincentives to breaking the rules, but so far it doesn't seem too punitive.
Because honestly, late in the game, the first one, I actually got no magic, no sharp weapons as a rule. And my entire team was sword users and magic users.
Yeah, so were you supposed to kill the enemies with your potions or something?
The only way you could do it is if you had, like, guns, essentially. And I had none. It was
just
awful.
A stupid idea.
Yeah,
so
that had crossed my mind that at one point could this be really, really annoying, but it hasn't been yet. I mean, it turns out that you get, like, these different scenarios. You know, that sometimes, you know, there's a bit of variety. Sometimes it's about protecting a certain character on the sort of isometric battle map. Sometimes it'll be about killing a specific one, killing all of them, defending locations for a certain number of turns. So they kind of mix around the sort of the actual objectives, you know, reasonably well to keep some variety in there. And I suppose the biggest difference with, I have obviously played Advance Wars, which has a certain amount in common with this kind of game.
Yeah,
and I guess the biggest difference. Fire Emblem obviously is by the same developers as the Advance Wars guys, and then this. But it does have a certain amount of core. I guess the biggest difference, obviously, is because of the RPG elements. it's not quite as, you know, strictly structured and kind of defined. Like in Advance Wars, obviously, you always know that if you're failing a mission, the way you're going to get better at it is your tactics are going to get better. You know, it's like, well, I'm going to think this through better. I'm going to have a better battle plan. Well, obviously, with this, it's like, well, I could just go and do a bunch more quests. I could grind more. I could get new weapons. I could muck around the abilities, the jobs, whatever. And that's how I'm going to beat it, you know, rather than to... So it's kind of, in a sense, a bit
it's
like...
It's also more luck-based.
Well, I suppose it may be, in that sense, you know, as well. But it's kind of, in one sense, it's more open-ended. It's not so much like there's one way to do this. Because there's a lot of different ways you could do it. There's a lot of different ways you could build up your clan. There's a lot of different ways you could approach it. But on the other hand, it's kind of not quite as much like almost sometimes Advance Wars, it's almost like a puzzle. You know, it's like you have to figure out the best, you know, how you're going to, you know, achieve the objectives in this. But whereas you don't quite get that sense with this because it's more open ended, which I kind of miss a bit relatively if I could, you know, drawing a comparison. But I mean, the production values are there, looks good. Sounds very nice. You know, Square obviously are pretty consistent with the quality of their sort of visuals and things on DS. They're very, very take that stuff quite seriously. So that's all showing up. And I would say, yeah, I like the see, for someone who's a total neophyte to this, I do like it so far. I mean, it doesn't really hold your hand through like learning all the intricacies of like the jobs and, you know, how you sell stuff to get new weapons and the new weapons give you abilities and all this stuff. I mean, it's
yeah,
deep.
And a lot of that stuff is probably optional to an extent.
Yeah, oh, it is. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't hold your hand through it, so it's like it really is a question of how much one wishes to experiment with it.
Well, Greg, I hate to cut you off, but we got to get to John. We're an hour into the show, and we've still got one person left to go, and then we're supposed to talk about E3 after this, after the break. So, John, catch us up, man.
All right, I'll make mine quick. Right now, I mean, I'm playing like Greg. I'm playing through Okami, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying the fact that it's, you know, it takes that kind of, you know, Twilight Princess formula, but it just makes it really, really refreshing. I actually, Greg, you can tell me how far I am into it, but I just beat the first plant boss that you fight. So I don't know how many bosses there are in it, or how much longer I have to go.
When you say plant boss, how many legs does it have?
It's the one where you just get the power where you can attach the vines to stuff.
Oh right, you're really quite early in the game then.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but it's still really good. I like what I like about it is the fact that they kind of, because it's in more of a fantasy kind of setting, they can do stuff like they have, when you're in a certain area, you can look into the sky and you can see what the names of each area is.
Yeah,
like where every exit is.
It's more kind of abstract.
Yeah, I really
isn't
like
it?
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they're not trying to be kind of realistic with it. Like, it's kind of like you're in a storybook, so they can do stuff like that. So I really like that. So that's mainly what I'm playing Nintendo-wise. I'm still waiting to get my copy of Space Invaders Extreme.
No, I've got that.
Amazon,
I've got that on order.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. 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 Amazon has just been sitting on it for like a month, and supposedly it's going to come this week. So
nice.
I'm still waiting on that.
I was playing that, but I kind of hit a brick wall, like just with the difficulty. I got to some levels that I just can't really get past, mainly the bosses, and I have this feeling in the back of my mind that if I had the paddle controller, then I'd be able to beat it. So it kind of,
yeah.
I just haven't gotten around to ordering a paddle yet. So
you should have gotten that on PSP, by the way. I am a junkie on that game. I love it, but I don't.
Yeah. I've heard most people say the DS version is better.
Really?
But is
it's
the, yeah.
It's
well,
better
a lot
with
of people.
Dial control.
Yeah, some people say that with the paddle.
Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, some people.
Yeah, but also the DS has, you know, the when you go to the rounds, the like the little bonus stages, those occur across both screens in the DS, which it makes some of them interesting. Some of them could only be done on the DS. Like there's one where the enemies actually hide in the gap between the two screens, and they peek out, and you have to figure out where they are when they peek out, and then go over and shoot them while they're in the gap.
Oh, that's kind of
really
cool.
Interesting. Yeah,
that's
there's a lot of cool stuff, you know, really cool stuff.
And
like
I think
that.
There was
so
another issue.
There
was another issue that is that, like, the PSP backgrounds are like FMV or something. They're more like they're a lot more sort of complicated, but sometimes
I
that
think
can
you can turn them off.
They're
though.
More distracting or something. But I think most of the differences are quite minor, aren't they? It's very much the same game.
Yeah, mostly.
It helps that it's a widescreen too.
Right?
But Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that with the format.
Sorry.
Yeah, but yeah, hopefully Amazon will stop holding that.
Yeah, well, I actually ordered that today, John, so it'd be quite interesting to see if I beat you on this.
Hey, you guys could play together if you exchange friend codes. We can all play together.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I bet that we'll probably get it on the same day, Greg. Or very close to it.
Synchronicity.
How sad is that? let's see. Other stuff. Let's see, other stuff I'm playing. I've kind of got into the cult that is Virtua Fighter 5.
Really?
Started. Yeah. Really? Just for kicks. Because I picked up one of the Hori sticks.
Are you sure you're hardcore enough for that game?
I don't do it. No, I'm not. I can tell you that right now.
I played that in the arcade, and I'm like, this is beyond me. This is not for me.
Which version did you get?
The thing is, I got the 360.
Nice.
The 360 one, yeah.
We'll have to throw down.
So, I don't know. Yeah. I'm sure you would absolutely throttle me.
No, I suck at it, but I love it. It's super fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. I'm more fascinated by like kind of like the cult surrounding it than the actual game itself, because it's just such a, I mean, it's probably one of the ultimate competitive games out there. So
couldn't you have appreciated the cult around it without actually purchasing the game?
Well, that's the thing. I was so curious about it. I'm like, what makes, I mean, because people that love it, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, come on, what's the deal with this? Like, because to me, because I've never been into any of the previous games. I was just like, whatever, you know.
I don't really
I'm not
like
really
these
a huge
games.
Fighting
Let's
game
buy
fan.
It.
Yeah.
this sounds to me like how a million WoW addictions were born.
Yeah. I mean,
all these people are talking about it. I don't think I would like it, but I'm going to buy it anyway.
Well, even though nobody talks about Virtual Fighter.
Yeah, it's more the intensity of the people that do in that case,
yeah.
Rather than the number.
Well, I mean, I've always been curious about fighting games, period, because I've never seen the appeal of them. So I figured there must be some hook there.
Memorizing button combos is exciting.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess maybe it's just kind of the slavish sort of learning of button combos. But,
I don't think the memorization is what people like. I think people like the depth of the fighting once you're past that initial hurdle. You know,
yeah.
Once you don't even have to think about the button combinations anymore, you can just do it. That's when the game becomes interesting. And I guess the problem is people like me have a hard time getting to that point.
Should
and
we call
so
that
the
indoctrination?
Game never really develops into its full potential.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I can already tell right now that. I'll probably have that one eureka where I'll be like, oh my god, okay, so that's what I do in this case, you know, where like I'll kind of get over that hump and then like the whole thing will open up, but who knows, I might just
He's
say
so
yeah
optimistic.
This completely sucks. I am so optimistic, so
yeah, we'll see.
We'll see, but that's it, that's all.
Alright guys, well we'll wrap up this very long segment and take a quick break, and we'll be back with the very very last word on E3 2008. Okay, we're back with part two of the show, and we just want to put the final bow on E3 2008.
Bow.
And I wanted to make sure we weren't redundant with what's already been said, obviously, with the whole series last week and also episode 107, where these three guys talked about it. So I wanted to get into some stuff that Billy could talk about and also just kind of do the cleanup. So I guess first I want to talk about the aftermath. The takeaway, and what has struck me about the sort of general takeaway of the show is that a lot of people are talking about how terrible Nintendo's presence was. I mean, not just us, obviously we're the most concerned with it and we've talked a lot about it, but I saw a headline on yahoo.com talking about E3, and in the headline on the front page of Yahoo it talked about how terrible Nintendo's presence was.
Yeah.
And you click on it and that article had a pretty lengthy write-up on how shitty Nintendo's lineup was, and like how terrible Wii Music is, even as a casual game, which I certainly agree.
I'm not
with.
Sure "game" is the right word.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, casual toy.
At least from being there, I mean, you know, and I went, I had back-to-back appointments with everybody, pretty much, and the only appointment that I did not go to, which I'm absolutely regretting right now, is Sega. And the only reason I'm regretting that is because I didn't see Mad World, because that was like the one Wii game that honestly that I can think of off the top of my head that had a buzz going for it. And
well, it's stunning. It's awesome.
But you know, just you know, from the start of E3 with the press conference, obviously, you know, I'm sure you guys have talked about it quite a bit. But just being there, like, I have, you know, and I've been to a lot of Nintendo press conferences before, and I honestly like seeing Cammy and Reggie up there, which I'd like to dub as the Cleavers, because it just it just seemed like they got up on stage, and I totally agree with what Penny Arcade said. You know, here's a bunch of shit you don't care about, but, you know, in all honesty, you know, I don't know, that press conference wasn't for that audience, unless they were, you know, people from, like, Better Homes and Gardens, or, you know, whatever, National Geographic, or, like, Family Circle, like, honestly.
Reader's Digest,
Reader's Digest.
I felt like Reggie had been castrated up on the stage.
You know,
I mean,
and
where is the Reggie that was going to kick ass and take names?
Whatever,
well,
man.
He did.
He's paid, man.
He's that language, absolutely, but that attitude, that just completely gone. It's Reggie went up there, and he's like, we're making all this money, and, you know, here's Animal Crossing.
For the hardcore gamers, no less. Animal Crossing
for
the
hardcore
gamers. Yeah, which
is the biggest pile of shit I've ever seen in my life.
And
it's insulting, man.
When he says that. When he knows that.
Yeah, that was my biggest...
He knows it's the same fucking game.
That was my biggest problem with the whole proceedings, really. It wasn't so much the conference itself as some of the disingenuous remarks that followed it.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of, you know, Reggie saying stuff like, oh, you know, how could the hardcore gamers feel left out? You know, that's just to be dismissive of people... is, I think Johnny's used the expression insulting their intelligence, and I think that's about right. You know, it's disrespectful.
Well,
it's
I posted in the forums about this, and I think the problem with Nintendo was not so much what they showed or what they didn't show at the press conference and throughout the show. It was the way they communicated.
Yeah.
It was not only the dismissal of our concerns, but the total, you know, the total ignorance of what we were expecting, this... constant redirection of questions back to, well, you know, this is what we're showing, you should be happy with it.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, we had an entire interview with Charlie Shibata, who's the replacement for Beth Llewellyn. He's basically the vice president of public relations. And most of the interview was no comments or, well, look at Animal Crossing.
Mm, yeah.
So,
I mean, what I prefer,
like,
I mean, well, the one thing...
If you guys would actually talk to us, this would be a completely different situation. We wouldn't be so upset. I mean, I understand if you don't have Mario and Zelda ready to show, you're not going to show them. If Pikmin is not in a state where you can demo it, you're not going to demo it. But don't ignore that stuff.
Yes,
don't make fun of us when we ask about these things.
Yes, I mean,
treat us with a little respect.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that's the part of it.
The whole thing was disrespectful.
That's the part of it that I didn't enjoy. Is where it gets negative. You know, I mean, I think Miyamoto in his remarks was very much more like, you know, well, you know, this isn't the venue that we're looking to show off those sorts of things anymore. Now that's more honest to me. I mean, it may not really address concerns, but at least it's like saying, well, you know, this wasn't aimed at you, so naturally it's not going to appeal to you, whereas Reggie was. It did appeal to you, didn't it? How could it not?
But then,
you know, that,
but then, like,
that's,
what,
that's
what,
way more
what venue are they going to show stuff off?
Well, yeah, exactly. That,
what better than E3? I mean, come on.
It's going to have to be Tokyo. I mean, really.
I guess. Do they even do that anymore?
They've never done
Tokyo Game Show.
Yeah,
they've done,
like,
events alongside of it, but...
They've had, like, peripheral presences there.
Yeah, I think
nothing
that's...
nothing significant.
It's going to have to be that, or it's going to have... Well, they did appear at PAX last year, didn't they?
Yeah, but that's not like a mainstream...
Yes, and they will show
some
things at PAX.
That's not a mainstream show. And
but what
it doesn't have to be mainstream,
though,
because it's important
if they show something, it will get press. It doesn't matter where they show it.
Yeah, and also...
They could show it at the back alley
of
the Las Vegas porn convention. It wouldn't matter. They'd get coverage.
Well,
yeah,
and to get back to this issue of miscommunication, this is why in the forums and on the podcast now, instead of hardcore gamer or core gamer, I'm saying traditional gamer.
Traditional
I'm talking
gamer.
About the people who've been playing Nintendo games for 5, 10, 15, 20 years who didn't just pick up a Wii in the past 2 years, because somebody asked them during the Q&A about, you know, where are the games for core gamers, and they basically said, well, we believe the core gamer includes people who enjoy playing Wii Sports, blah, blah, blah. They're just turning into a game of semantics.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Well, it's like they've actually forced me to move on to a term that they can't as easily corrupt into their
co-opt,
Blue Ocean marketing. It's like they not only won't even answer our questions, they actually, like, try to put words in our mouths and change the language that we're using to discuss the situation to their advantage. It's very subversive.
Well, the biggest thing I have, well, wonder about all this is that if indeed it is the case that, and they are obviously Nintendo's internal teams and the third party people, they are clearly developing games that are more traditional, that would appeal to more traditional gamers. But if it is the case that, in fact, simply this is a function of developmental problems in that none of them are actually far enough along to show, I really have to question their organisation on that. How have they let it so that this window of the holiday is apparently going to come and go without one of those games having been prepared to actually release in that area? If that has come to pass...
That's only the beginning, Greg. I mean, speaking of miscommunication, just to push this theme even further... We asked Charlie Shibata in our interview at what point developers found out about these the new hardware like Motion Plus and Wii Speak, and he said, "I think they found out about it the same time you did."
Doesn't
instill a whole lot of optimism in me that there are going to be games to support these things.
And one would have to question why, even if that were true, why they would want us to know that, because it sounds really bad.
that was pretty much the only honest, straightforward answer we got out of him during that interview.
But the simple fact of the matter is, and the reason they didn't show any hardcore, you know, gamers games, is because they don't have to. You know, the fact of the matter is,
I don't think they
as far as I'm concerned, the press conference, you know, Reggie got up on stage and said, "Oh yeah, the Mario and Zelda teams are working on stuff," and then he went, "Fuck you, core gamers, you don't matter to us anymore, because the more casual set and the soccer moms out there and your mom and dad and your grandparents and your friends who never buy consoles that have just bought a Wii are their audience, and that's who they care about now." And that's the sad reality of the situation.
My feelings on this are, though, that in fact that's not as simple as that at the end of the day, that they will not be able to exclusively rely on that going forward, in my opinion. And if they do, if they really, because they're just, the software numbers are not, I believe this is a message to continue to drive hardware sales and to continue to drive specific software sales, but ultimately if they literally turn their back on the more traditional gamers, the people have had Wii for virtually launch, what will happen is that people essentially fall out of the Wii scene. You know, they do pick up competitor consoles, and even whatever games that are more traditionally focused, that they clandestinely sort of slip under our bedroom pillows at night with no marketing whatsoever, will cease to sell because people are just too busy getting involved with 360s and PS3s or whatever else. So it's simply, to turn their back so completely is not a tenable strategy, and I don't think they will do that. But I just think...
But seriously, the press conference that they had. I mean, they announced Wii Sports 2, which for the mom and dads out there in the more casual set and for
is
the people
orgasmic.
That's their Zelda. So they're like, you know, they're blowing their loads all over the place while we're going, great.
It's also no surprise whatsoever.
And it's not. But for them, it's like awesome. That's like Cabbage Patch Kids 2. And then you have something like Wii Music this year, which is new, and it's not a game. I mean, in all reality, like, it's the dumbest thing ever if you've ever played any music game. But for that audience, it totally makes sense. And like, I hate to admit the fact that it totally makes sense, but like, you know, Wii Sports and Wii Music for that crowd, you know, they've got a boner is the size of Texas for that shit. And like,
well, be that as it may, the problem is that the problem I have with that strategy from a business point of view, if I'm Nintendo, is that there are a very limited number of those games that they can actually generate that kind of buzz and identification with that audience, and it's going to be upwards of a couple of years. The people that have bought Wii from the beginning are looking to buy far more games, and they will buy far more games if they're given the chance. I think they will. Yeah, I mean, people that bought Wii from the beginning
are going to be disappointed with something like Wii Music. I know plenty of casual gamers. I know plenty of people who the Wii is basically the first game system they've bought in 15 years, and they're good friends. They're smart people, and they do have critical abilities. You know, they buy stuff like Wii Play because it's cheap and it comes with a controller, and it seems like a good deal. And then if you ask them do they ever play it, they say no, it's stupid. but it was $10. And I think they're going to play Wii Music and say, this is kind of stupid, but I paid $50, and I'm kind of pissed.
One of the biggest issues I have.
I think Wii Music is not going to go over that smoothly. I do think it'll sell well. I don't think it's going to generate a whole lot of goodwill for Nintendo, because I think it's not really a very good product. But the really sad thing about what's going on right now in the whole Wii development community is that there are a lot of really interesting games for traditional gamers coming up from the third party ranks. There's not as many as I would like, and some of them aren't, you know, certainly don't have the amazing graphics or anything, but there are some really cool things out there, and they're going to get lost. They're absolutely going to get lost because Nintendo is not going to promote them from the first party perspective. You know, like back on GameCube, you had Nintendo showing commercials for Soul Calibur 2 with the GameCube logo at the end and Link being in the game. That's not a Nintendo game, that's a Namco game, now Namco Bandai, but Nintendo is promoting it because they thought it was good for their business model.
Oh, sure.
And that sort of thing is not going to happen anymore, because as you can see from the press conference, Nintendo's not interested in promoting that kind of game, and unfortunately things like Mad World, although it looks like it's going to be a really cool game, that's not going to sell. Yeah. It's just not, because Nintendo's not going to help with it. Sega doesn't know what to do with it. I'm pretty sure that they're not going to have any idea how to market that. And regardless of the game's quality, it's going to fail. And unfortunately, that's going to perpetuate this vicious cycle of good third-party, mature, or, you know, just good hardcore games coming out on Wii, and they don't sell well, and then the publishers decide not to make that kind of game anymore.
Well,
that's going to get worse.
That's typical, though. That's why Boom Blocks has only sold like 60 or 70K.
I mean, that game could be marketed as a casual game. I thought Nintendo really missed a big opportunity to push that game as something that third parties are doing. And
you would have thought that of all the third party publishers that there are, EA could have handled it by themselves. They're such an enormous company. You would have thought if there's any company that doesn't necessarily need the help of Nintendo, even though that would have been nice, that they could have maybe pulled it off, but they didn't.
Why didn't they put ads in The Sims 2?
EA
already has a stranglehold on that demographic, and they just didn't use it. I don't understand.
That was a shame.
What they did with Boom Blocks.
Well, I mean, that's my worry with games like The Conduit. You know, everybody's kind of hanging their hat on The Conduit as, you know, sort of the mature savior of the Wii lineup. But that game's not going to sell any copies. It's not.
No,
you know, it's kind of like, thanks for the effort, you know, guys, but I'm sorry, you're basically putting that, you know, you're putting your time and effort into something that is just going to go out there and die in the marketplace.
Well, it's an interesting case.
You know, if Nintendo actually cared, Nintendo could publish that game in America.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, the interesting case is they could have shown it at the press conference.
That would have generated an incredible amount of goodwill in
absolutely.
The Nintendo community.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, you
we
know, I'm not saying that's the only thing they
right
could
now.
Have done, but that certainly was an option.
I mean, it would have been so easy for them to do that, and it's a no-brainer, really, but Nintendo just doesn't care about that.
Well,
so
we wouldn't be having this
conversation right now if they were publishing this game.
Well, I mean, there's still the questions about what the hell their other internal development teams are doing.
We might be having a bad conversation, you know, saying it wasn't a great show, but we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Maybe not, but I mean, you look at the Fatal Frame case. That's ostensibly where they are doing that. They are partnering up with Tecmo and the Grasshopper and all that, and it's supposed to be this partnership, and it's coming out this month in Japan. And obviously, it's difficult for us outside of Japan to really assess what exactly they're doing to promote that in the right ways and things. But obviously, presumably, if they were going to bring it over here, over to the West.
Nintendo's going to publish it.
So, what is going to become of that in the West? I mean, there was no discussion of it at all.
It'll come out.
I guess it's up in negotiations. I think it will come out, but I don't think Nintendo's interested in publishing it here.
Well,
I mean, they are publishing it in Japan. Yeah, I don't know if Tecmo will. I don't know who will. But if Nintendo was going to publish that here, they would have locked that up before E3 so they could put it at least in their press kit.
Yeah,
at
like
least
sort
to give
of
somebody
like
something
sort
positive
of,
to talk about.
Even if it was very sort of subtly slipped in, sort of like the Rhythm Heaven localization that was, you know, played down, but you know, it was
yeah,
it
that
was
press
in there
kit was kind of a disaster anyway. So,
Well,
there wasn't.
Anyway, I kind of want to move on to a different aspect of the E3 topic, and I definitely want to get Billy's input here into what interested you that you saw on the other platforms, and we can get for these other guys who didn't go to the show. I mean, what interested you from afar? What were you curious about? And I might be able to throw in a couple cents too. So.
All right.
I know you're enthusiastic about a few things.
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw, you know, I did actually, there's only one game, like, I just put together, like, my top five for Crispy Gamer yesterday, and there was only one game that, well, it totally, like, blew my mind, and unfortunately, I can't talk about it until August 20th, but I can say what the name is, and it's a game called Heavy Rain, and that's for the PlayStation 3. It's done by the developer called Quantic Dream, and they did a game for the PS2 called Indigo Prophecy.
Have you played Indigo Prophecy?
I personally haven't, and I think I have it in my arsenal somewhere. I want to look it up because I want to see what the differences are as far as like gameplay elements, but I really can't go into any detail, unfortunately, but. Honestly, it's as far as I know, it's PS3 exclusive. So
yeah, the game that had that they showed the tech demo of the crying woman with the gun like in 2006?
Yes, and you should watch that. Like, go check that out, and just look at just the visuals that are there, and that's all I'm going to say. and it's not just visuals. So there's I wish I could say more because like. Honestly, like, everybody, I think I, like, looked at my notes afterwards, and it had just, like, everything about the game, and then it said, holy fuck, underlined, and then game of the show. And that's literally what it said. And after that, everything else I saw was just like, eh, whatever. That's not, you know, but honestly, that's a game to keep your eye out for. It's an interesting French developer. It's really unique. And
now, is that the only game that you saw, quote, behind closed doors? Because I think
no, I saw a lot of games behind closed doors, but
oh, really?
I mean,
I saw a couple things that I guess were technically behind closed doors, but that sort of meant you couldn't take video and you couldn't just waltz in; you had to have an appointment. But as far as like stuff that was heavily embargoed, it seemed like there was a lot less of that this year than there was at past E3s, maybe because it's in July instead of May.
I think that was the only game that, as far as I can honestly recall, it was heavily embargoed. But if you know your dates about any upcoming game shows, August 20th is Leipzig. So,
right. I'm a developer, that makes sense.
I'm assuming they're going to show it again in Germany, and I can follow up. You know, after I go back this year, but that was really cool. I don't want to talk about it anymore because if I do, I'll probably fuck up something I signed. So that being said, I think you know, there was 360's got a great lineup. Also, I thought Sony also has a great lineup this year. I don't think like if you're looking for that secondary console, I don't think you can go wrong either way. Sony's first party lineup is absolutely stellar. Resistance 2, I think is incredible. I really liked the first one. I know there's a lot of people that thought it was kind of generic, but I thought it was a great shooter, and I'm really looking forward to that a lot. I'd say Resident Evil 5 was up there on my list, even though the AI was a little bit wonky. They still have, and that's not coming this year anyway, but they still have a lot of time to work on it and polish it up. But I mean, it's basically Resident Evil 4 that looks even better and also has online co-op, which is incredible. Like, I think that's fantastic. And
I walked by Cliffy B playing Resident Evil 5 in Capcom's booth. I had to go over to see fucking Neopets and MotoGP,
nice.
Whatever they're calling it, because Capcom's Wii lineup was god awful.
Was it Ubisoft Soft Desk?
It was worse.
Impossible.
Hey, at least Ubisoft for the Wii has Sean White, which I actually like. So
yeah, I played that and I like the controls for it, but the actual like game design is so stripped down from the next gen versions. Like, there's no online at all.
Yeah.
You can't even like have leaderboards. Like, the guy demoing the Wii version said, you know, this is a game where people can sit around and play the same run over and over again and try to get better scores than their friends. And I was like, so can you compare your scores with your friends online? He's like, no.
Get better scores than your friends.
Come on.
Just well, trade them on scraps of paper. It's pathetic.
That being said, though, like, I mean, I don't want Wii Fit. Like, I belong to a gym because, you know, I'd rather get outside and, like, do that shit. But I want a bounce board because I want Shaun White and I want Skate It. Like, those are, you know, actually, like, games that I really would like to play with the bounce board. Not Wii Music with that, like, retarded drummer guy, but, like...
Oh,
you
dude,
know.
I played the drum thing for Wii Music, and it's not fun. I played it for, like, 30 seconds. I'm like, okay, I've had enough.
Yeah, it's a masturbation simulator, as far as I'm concerned, but, you know,
yes.
Like... anyway, like, you know, I'd say RE5 is really slick. Gears of War 2 is... I didn't like... I played through the first Gears co-op. The story was stupid, and there wasn't one, and then the characters really just bothered me. It was just like two dudes, like, you know, it was like the 13-year-old like thought process of masculinity, and like,
yeah,
you know, it's just like ugh,
big bulking men shooting things.
Damn it! Oh,
Billy, do you remember the movie called about college football called The Program?
Yeah,
in the '90s. Do you remember the big white linebacker guy with long hair who was taking steroids?
Uh-huh.
Like, that every yeah. time I see Gears of War, it makes me think of that guy, where he's like he's like headbutting through car windows and stuff. Anyway.
But, you know, that being said, though, like, you know, like,
Gears
this
is great. Come
I played the online version of it at a little like after party thing, and that was really a lot of fun, and I dug it. Rock Band 2, like, I mean, Guitar Hero to me, you know, I'm sorry, Johnny, I think you're crazy, but, like, you know, I wouldn't even go near the Wii with either Rock Band or Guitar Hero, even though Guitar Hero finally has, you know, downloadable content coming to it, you know, solely because the fact that all my friends and people that I know that have Rock Band are going to be playing it on 360 or PS3, mainly 360, and... You know, the downloadable content and the audio. I mean, I couldn't even imagine how compressed that shit's going to be on the Wii. Because it's going to have to be either that or you're going to have just some ridiculously huge SD card.
The DLC.
Yeah.
For the DLC.
Yeah, I don't know how that's working, but as far as the stuff on the disc, the Wii uses the same disc format that 360 does. So,
yeah.
I mean,
well,
the sound quality is the same.
If I recall correctly, the Wii can only recognize a 2 gig SD card. It's maximum.
Right, that's the maximum. Mm. But I
so
store a lot of songs in 2 days.
Then you're absolutely screwed. I mean, Rock Band's going to have 500 songs by the end of the year, and
you're going to need, like, 40 SD cards.
That's going to be incredible. And, like, I'm just talking about, like, I know it has the same disc thing, but, like, compression-wise, as far as what those guys are going to have to do to, if they're going to make DLC, like, manageable as far as the Wii is concerned. Plus, I don't want white drums. I'm not, you know... in space, or, you know.
Well, not just that, I mean...
THX-118.
Yeah, I've noticed that just in the day I've had the 360, or days, downloads are much faster from their service than they are from the Wii.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah!
My God, it took like 6 minutes to get the 2-block downloadable content from My Life as a King. It took 15 to get a 700-meg game demo.
Dude, I downloaded all the shit from E3, like, all the trailers I wanted, all the demos and everything. I did it in, like, 3 minutes or 4 minutes or something like that, where just a Wii update, you know, you make cracks about the fact that, you know, PlayStation 3 has, you know, you have to install stuff, so go make a sandwich, but... Dude, I could make a 5-course meal by the time it takes me to update my Wii.
You never know when you're almost done, because the damn thing has no good indicator.
And so, the thing is, too, it's like you update the thing for what? So you can, like, see the name of a disc that's in the tray? It's great.
Hell yes!
I'm not trying to shit all over the Wii. It's just like, you know, there are games on there that I'm actually looking forward to this year. There's just not that many. But, you know, as far as, like, what other third-party stuff? Like, I thought Afro Samurai looked really good. That was at Namco Bandai.
I've heard a lot of good things about it.
The anime, if you've never seen it, is awesome. It is. There's a box set out there. I totally would Netflix it and like, or buy it because it's cool. It's just
and
like
this is the one with Samuel L. Jackson, right?
Yes, and
wow.
But
I have to check that out.
It's really good. And I hope the game stands up. They wouldn't let people have hands on until Comic-Con, which is this week. Which I was like, well, that's really dumb because it's gonna be the same freaking build. But like, whatever. That companies do that shit all the time. Mirror's Edge from EA I thought was pretty cool, except I played it when I was kind of hungover. It was the first game I played on Friday, and I just kind of like burped up a little bit, like I wasn't gonna throw up or anything, but like it was like
did you
I
have to swallow it back down?
Well, no, I wasn't like I just felt kind of like I didn't feel all that hot, and it was pretty funny because I even told the PR guy, I was like, dude, this is not the game you want to play when you're hungover. But
I heard that people actually got sick playing that game. Is there any truth to that?
There weren't people throwing up, but there's people that got like that did feel like queasy or that motion thing, which I kind of can get. But like, it's really stylish. It seems like it could be a lot of fun. It's very it's a nice different perspective for a first person game. And I really look forward to seeing how it turns out. It still needs some work, but like, I don't know. I thought it was pretty
awesome
neat
from what I've seen. But
you know what? The problem with getting motion sick from a game like that is, as the visuals get more realistic and you get more immersed in the world, and that game's definitely about immersion. You know, there's like no numbers and shit overlaid on the screen. Or
yeah, there's no HUD. There's no HUD whatsoever.
Right, as you get more immersed in it, anything that's not realistic, like the way the camera moves when you walk, if it doesn't have a natural sway to it, if the distance between your view and your feet is significantly different than you have in real life, stuff like little subtle touches that are really hard to anticipate, those are the things that will actually upset your neurovestibular system. Because you've kind of committed your brain into thinking this is real. And so anything that comes across as not real will really bother you.
Well, and plus here, it's the
uncanny valley taken to a physiological level. And it's going to be a problem, I think, especially like the next generation of games. When this sort of thing is more common.
Yeah.
Well, plus it's at a show like E3 where you're butt-ass close to the screen.
Right.
So it's not like you're sitting on your couch and you're distanced away. I mean... and plus I was a little hungover and I didn't eat breakfast yet. Whatever. It is what it is.
That's the game I'm going to buy a huge TV to play with because it just looks like it would be so awesome on a big screen TV. But
you play that on Contras's, like 110-inch screen, that you might as well have a barf bag in front of you because you'll be
freaking
your guts out.
Just bring over the garbage can.
Yeah,
Billy, did you play Dead Space over there at EA? Because I thought that looked awesome.
I didn't play it. I saw it. I kind of knew a lot about it due to a former employer, and they had it on their cover. So I watched it. I'm not a scary games guy. I'm a pussy. I'll be totally honest with you. Like, I can't, and it's a horror game.
You're a huge fan of Half-Life 2, though.
Yeah, but Half-Life's not really scary, and I'll do anything for Alex, man. I'm all up in that. I'm a huge Valve guy, but that's another good game to bring up. Left 4 Dead. Oh my God, awesome! That was like my number two game, I think, at the show. It's Valve's next first-person shooter. They bought out the company that did it called Turtle Rock Studios. And it's going to take team-based gaming, team-based shooter, totally to the next level. People thought Team Fortress redid it, which it didn't because Team Fortress is, 10 years old. But it's like a zombie shoot-em-up where you're trying to get from point A to point B, and you have floods of zombies and bosses coming at you, and you totally have to work together. You heal each other. It's super intense. It is creepy. It is kind of scary, but, who the hell don't like to shoot zombies in the face? I've been playing Resident Evil, but, it's It's really good. You got to check that game out.
I think the concepts for Left 4 Dead are really interesting, but for me, the setting, the whole, we're in a city, we're survivors, the zombies are running after us, is so overdone. I wish that same game was applied to, like, something different that you're not used to seeing. Like this, I don't know, maybe this thing Ubisoft's doing, like, I Am Alive, where it's a, you know, like, it's a survival game after this earthquake, but it's not, like, survival horror. There's not monsters coming to get you. You're just trying to survive. I mean, that's sort of a different take. There's a lot of other stuff you could do with it, too, but for me, like, one of the refreshing things about Team Fortress 2 is that it's a rare first-person shooter that's not scary. It's just comical. I mean, it's still exciting. It's still high energy, but it's not about things jumping out at you. And that's one of the things that pisses me off about Half-Life 2 is that it does have zombies. It has little things in the shadows that jump at your face and make you say, ah! And I just, like, get tired of that. BioShock had that, too. It's like, come on. I mean, you guys have this amazing environment, this amazing story that you're conveying in an unusual way, these really cool gameplay mechanics, and yet I'm basically fighting zombies. And yeah, but I'm just so sick of that.
The best part about it, though, is the versus mode, because then you can direct the bosses and you can direct the zombies. There's two players that can do it on the other side. And then on top of it, what's even better is the voice chat is for everybody. So for griefers, they can talk shit.
Oh,
like while they're sneaking up in back of people.
Game's
and like
now.
You're about to like totally fuck somebody up and like and then you're like, hey, Johnny, what's going on? And then bam, like just totally bring the hurt, you know, and like for griefers and stuff, like they're gonna be total douchebags, but like if a team works well together, it's absolutely phenomenal. And that's the twist that I think that makes, even though it's a zombie game, it's awesome. But the environment is cool. It's like there's like gritty like movie feel to it, and I don't know. I I'm a huge Valve guy. Like they have not put out anything that I did not like, and it's tremendous. And you know, I was really hoping to see episode 3, but according to what I know from Valve, they're not showing anything from episode 3 until Left 4 Dead is out. So
that doesn't surprise me.
Which is a bummer, but I mean, that game is pretty sweet. I'm trying to think what else. Fallout 3 I thought was pretty cool. I only played it for 20 minutes, but like it's going to be a 100-hour game. You know, if you
20
do
20 minutes is a long demo at E3.
Well, you know, but
that's a pretty lengthy time to play in one game.
Yeah, but that being said, you know, that's like, you know, doing a 20-minute demo of an MMO when you play that game for like, you know, days, you know, of real time. So,
well, I have to say the only thing I've seen of Fallout 3 was during the Microsoft press conference, and that demo was not exciting. But I've heard that it really wasn't it wasn't fair to the way the game really plays.
No, it wasn't, and that's just getting like a sliver. And even though Todd did a whole awesome job on stage, and I think he's hilarious, like, I think Fallout 3 is going to be definitely one to watch for sure, especially for people that like really deep role playing games. And not saying like Oblivion, because personally for me, like Oblivion had so much shit to do that I didn't know, I couldn't even get into it just because I was just like lost. And this is coming from somebody that's, you know, and it was, but like Fallout, like I don't know, maybe it's just because it's not like the same setting, but like I don't know, it's something about Fallout that I'm just like totally drawn to, and also the character faces don't look retarded as I thought they did in Oblivion, so which I hope nobody from Bethesda is hearing this because they'll give you shit for it. But
don't worry about it.
That being said, God, there honestly was, you know, I hate to say it, but there were a lot of games that I liked a lot, but there weren't a lot of games that like absolutely like blew me away outside of that one that I mentioned before. You know, but like, you know, I could go on for, you know, Soul Calibur was there. That was also really good. And I played it before, but I haven't. I mean, it's coming out really shortly. Or if you're in the right state, you can buy it right now. But
now, what about Mag? Was that playable at all, or was it?
No, that was just Sony. They just dropped that at the end. They just dropped it at the end and showed a trailer. But it's Zipper Interactive, who are the guys that have done SOCOM, and now nobody really knows much about it outside of what they announced. But I mean, in the way it seems to me is it sounds like an MMO shooter kind of thing. I mean, those are, you know, hate to say it for a Sony thing, massive battles, but those are massive battles, and you know, having that many people, you know, that many people at, you know, in one online game is pretty fucking incredible. I mean,
that could be a clusterfuck. I mean, the question there is, can they actually design a game? Because just showing off that you can run enough servers to get 256 people playing in the same map doesn't make a good game. In fact, it probably is quite the opposite. It's actually, the more people you put in there, the harder it is to make it a good game.
Yeah, and I understand that, but like Resistance is going to have, 64. What, 60? 64. You know,
yeah.
It'll basically be about that.
But what they're doing with that game,
eight teams of eight, or
whatever. They're breaking it up, so you know, you'll still be in more of an intimate setting, even though there's a larger scale deal going on at the same time. So, yeah, it depends on how they can pull it off. It's so early. I mean, you know, they're not really talking about much with it. So, but the concept is there, and it sounds pretty cool. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, coming from the Wii background, when Mario Kart's like the best thing on online for Wii right now, and it only has that amount of people. I mean, I like playing with a shit ton of my friends, and if I can get, you know, 20 of my friends together to play a game, I think that's really exciting. I'm trying to think.
All right,
else.
Well, that's cool, man. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to chew on, and I mean, I think it's fun just to hear about all these games that we don't normally talk about. For me, the big game that's not coming to Wii was Prince of Persia, and you weren't that impressed by it, were you?
No, I thought it was cool. I mean, I like the art style a lot. They didn't let us play it. It was a driven demo. I thought the art style was absolutely gorgeous. And the AI character that you play along with, like, I was concerned about that at first, like, because there's a lot of games that have AI characters, and they generally tend to get in the way. Like, the only games that I can honestly think of that don't have that problem are like Alex from Half-Life, or I would even say the squad in MGS4 in that one section.
Even
like,
Alex gets in your way sometimes. You have to push her, and she's like, annoying.
Too. But this character is like an integral part of the game. Like, you need her in the game, and it's built around that whole deal. And I mean, we don't know a lot about it. It is doing like this light dark concept shit that we've seen way too many times. But I'm hoping that they do something different. You know, I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it looked pretty cool. I want to see more, and I want to get my hands on it. And I think they're gonna let people play it at Leipzig. So I look forward to seeing it.
You're making me jealous now. That game, total gamer boner. I mean, just like have to play it. Anyway, we'll move on to our final section of the talk and try to make it quick. But I kind of wanted to go over some of the remaining questions. I mean, if this is the last time we're really going to talk about E3, what's left to, I mean, what do we have going forward? What was not answered there that needs to be answered in the coming months? And I mean, especially from
everything.
The Nintendo's perspective, there are a lot of stuff. But
everything, anything, and whatever else.
Well, just I kind of struck it down to three topics, and I think the foremost one that really bothered a lot of us was the lack of a storage solution. And again, you know, I mean, even just today, I was reading Chris Kohler's interview. I think Mike Sklens, Striker Obi, pointed it out to me, and he asked Cammy Dunaway last week at E3 about it, and she basically just turned the question right back around on him and didn't answer it. And
I think Reggie and Miyamoto have both said, "Oh, we're always looking at various solutions that we're not announcing."
Well,
and ignoring them.
Cammy even turned it around and she said, "Well, in my household, we tend to just delete games."
Yes.
Well, good for you.
Deleting games can be a family activity. It can be like that's really cute. One thing we haven't addressed actually, though, but related storage is the fact that WiiWare got practically blanked at that.
Oh yeah.
In terms of they didn't talk, because that was a popular theory in that Nintendo would not actually satiate or placate sort of core traditional gamers with disc-based software, but they might throw bones in the form of WiiWare games. But beyond one word mention, it didn't feature in the conference at all. But they have, in response to questions and interviews, sort of intimated that they might sort of surprise us with something before the year's end. So I mean, that to me is really interesting. Are they actually going to bother with their internal development teams doing WiiWare games? Finally,
I'm greatly looking forward to Pokemon Ranch 2. But obviously, I haven't been very impressed with their WiiWare offerings so far, which are very limited.
But they're not really there WiiWare offerings.
They haven't offered anything besides Pokemon Ranch 2, really. I mean,
yeah, I think both of those games actually were developed by other studios.
Exactly, that's what I mean. I mean, are there internal teams working on WiiWare at all? Is this actually what they're doing?
I kind of get the impression that they're not. They keep talking about, we really created WiiWare for other studios, and honestly, I'm starting to believe them. I'm starting to think that they really have no interest in doing stuff, especially when you look at a game like... What the hell is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
But it's staying in.
Maybe Louis walking all over the keyboard or something. But anyway, I've lost my train of thought.
In terms of whether they're actually going to...
Holy shit!
What are you doing?
Is that Billy?
It's got
Yeah,
to be.
That's me.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm just getting ice. I'm sorry.
Oh.
It sounded like you were wrestling with a stack of 8-tracks. Good God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thanks.
Oh, God. Yeah, I really think Nintendo basically are... I think they've kind of set up WiiWare, and they've told developers, go hog wild, and they're not really interested in doing anything with it themselves. And that's probably part of the reason they're not concerned about a storage solution, because it doesn't really affect them directly. They're just like, it's not our problem. You know, we're not,
and of course,
we're not doing this stuff. We're not putting DLC in our games.
And
so
Virtual
we don't
Console, they continue to show very little interest in terms of their games. I mean, more and more, it's, it was Hudson carrying the can. Now it's Neo Geo.
You know how it is. I mean,
fighters.
Really,
shooters and fighters.
Why do you really need more storage when they just release one Neo Geo game every week?
Yeah. Seriously, buy them all on the disc. It can be
done. Just say it. Exactly.
I didn't expect them to talk about Virtual Console very much at E3 because it's just not that relevant.
Not.
It's
but,
not.
But the interesting point that I took from this is that Katsuya Iguchi's people are doing all these games that they talked about, so apparently they're not working on WiiWare and all this, and they're not apparently working on the DS. Or the only things they are working on DS is remakes. You know, they're not even fully original. What the hell are they doing? What are these teams working on?
In the case of the DS, the complete lack of DS development shown at E3 really very strongly indicates to me that they're working on a new handheld system, and probably all of their DS development teams have moved on to that,
why
and they're
they?
Getting
I
ready
mean, they,
for it.
They're still completely
why? Because
dominant.
They've reached saturation in Japan. I mean, do you want to know why PSP is outselling DS in Japan? It's because there's no one left to sell DSs to. I mean, they've actually sold more DSs in Japan than there are households. So they've actually sold multiple DSs per household.
But they're still selling quite
complete market saturation.
They're still selling about as many DSs a week as they are Wii's, though, to put it in perspective. I mean, they're not. The PSP has overtaken it, but some of that is the fact that the PSP is actually performing much better than it was. And obviously, the DS has fallen off from, 100,000 a week? But now it's like 40,000, which is what the Wii's doing. Now, obviously, console handheld is different, but. You know, they're still selling. You've still got Dragon Quest IX coming. Pace is accelerating in the West. It's accelerating in the West.
Right.
It's not
so that's why I'm saying they're developing Japanese games for the Japanese market. Because as far as the DS is concerned in Japan, the writing is on the wall. Nintendo is not going to let the DS peter out into nothingness like they did with the GameCube and like they're going to do with the Wii one day. And they did the N64 too. They're not going to wait until it's already dead before they announce the next system. They want to keep this momentum up.
There's a big difference between the DS and the Nintendo 64, the GameCube, and even the GBA. Is that the third party support has been gathering steam gradually. You know, Square Enix is just throwing its arms around it ever more lovingly all the time, and that matters a great deal in Japan. And in the West too. So I would be surprised if they were so absolute. I mean, of course they'll be transitioning if they have things ready and they're confident in their, you know, sort of viability. They'll be transitioning development to a new system. But it seems curious. I mean, they certainly can afford to in terms of third parties will carry the DS. But it seems curious that they would so. I mean, because it is foregoing really easy money to just put out certain games that they could put out on DS. Right now,
they are handling it the way Sony handled the PS2, PS3 transition.
No, but look at historically, when the DS came out, the GBA was selling like the DS is now.
Right.
Okay. So everybody was like, "What the hell are you guys doing? You guys are idiots." GBA is still selling like a mother, and you guys are coming out with this. And that's, remember, they called it the third pillar. Which was total bullshit because. At the end of the day,
they were going to drop that bitch.
Yeah, they were. This was their next portable system, and it was also an experiment too. They also didn't realize.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know if the DS was going to be a success or if it was going to be another Virtual Boy. So
the GBA was only about 3.5
years
old.
It was early in the life cycle. It was early.
The DS has already had a longer life than the GBA did.
So
they are definitely getting ready. I'm a little surprised that they didn't announce anything at E3, but I think probably they think it's a little early. And E3 is primarily an American show, and I think whatever they've got coming will launch in Japan way before it comes out in America because the sales are so different in those regions.
Sure.
So I think they're gearing up for a Japan only exclusive release for probably 6 months, and they want a lot of good Japanese appeal games for that system when it launches. And I think they might announce this before the end of the year.
I would bet my left nut on the fact that they announce something before the end of the year. Yeah. If not, they're going to do what they did with the SP.
Shock me. It really would. That would shock
me. And
they'll
do it right after Christmas. They'll do it right after Christmas like they do with the SP. Watch.
Yeah. See, I think.
Well, remember, the DS was announced basically in January of 2004 in Japan when they started talking about this two-screen thing. It was very mysterious. You know, they're talking about like a soccer game where you can have the whole field on one screen. And we didn't even know it had a touch screen yet. They were just trying to justify the fact that it had two screens. And everybody's like, what? That came out in like January of 2004, and then the system was out by November. That's probably roughly the timeline that this is going to happen on. But I think that's why we didn't see any Nintendo development on the DS at E3. It's because the stuff they're making, they don't want to show us yet. It's on a new system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I really hadn't considered. I thought that honestly that they would probably wait until next year to announce anything, but. I mean, that makes sense, because there was really nothing from Nintendo, period. I mean, it's all third-party now. And, I mean, even at that point, I really get the feeling that the third parties are just kind of making their last gasp. So.
Well, I mean, the third-party development is reaching its peak, and then it will drop hard. It will drop hard and fast.
Yep.
The last topic I want to talk about briefly before we go is just the future of E3 itself, and we kind of can get a couple different perspectives on it, both from the home team and from the people who are actually there. But I don't know, what do you guys who watched it from afar, what do you think of it?
I think there is no future. I mean,
you think
the thing
gone?
Is, I think it's done, at least in its present. I mean, just all those problems with the ESA, that really bodes poorly for the future of the event. I mean, just the fact that you don't have major players like Blizzard and Activision in there, that's, you know, I mean, and you even have all these major companies like EA, they're all doing their own press conferences now. I mean, there's just, I just don't see a whole lot of confidence from anybody in the event anymore. I mean.
Well, you know, I think part of the situation now is that the ESA has to make some kind of move, or they're going to risk just basically falling apart. Then I wouldn't be surprised to see them shrink down E3 or do something completely insane to try to make this thing more relevant again and completely fucking it up.
Well, what I didn't understand was how they said that, you know, they were saying that the old one was too much of a circus and there were 60,000 people there. How is it bad to expose your industry to 60,000 people?
I never got that either. It was like, well, you know, we have all these people here. God damn it. Why are these people looking at all our stuff we're trying to show off?
It wouldn't have been so bad if there had been, like, a press-only day like they do at TGS.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was... Well, I mean, you've been to TGS, Billy. I mean,
TGS is still a clusterfuck. I mean, let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, I won't argue with that either. You know, you guys brought up a lot of interesting points. The one thing I will say, as far as like Activision and Blizzard, like they're in Sierra and all that shit, their merger and everything was just going through, like, I think the week before.
Yeah.
So that could have had something to do with the fact why they weren't there. But the simple fact of the matter is, like, they actually did it. They pulled a smart move because all the press were there anyway, and they just had a separate event where they rented out their separate stuff and had people there. And
well, they had no
expense. They're not in the ESA
thing,
anymore. I mean,
well,
they couldn't just show up.
Johnny, you said they spared no expense, but I bet a lot of money that it was cheaper for them to rent out that church place that they did to do that whole thing and have their open bar and all that food and all that crap. It was cheaper for them to do that than it was to rent out space in the LA Convention Center, which, from what I've been told, costs a shitload of money. And you don't get that much space. And, like, whatever the floor space. And I'll be honest with you, I never even went on the show floor because I was always in the meeting rooms and everything.
It's too bad because the show floor was nice. Like, it was totally useful because it was close by. So, like, if you had 30 minutes between appointments, you could go down there, and there were no lines really anywhere because it wasn't that crowded. So you could go in there and play two or three games between appointments and actually get stuff done. And all the booths were close together. They were open, so it was easy to find the games that you wanted to go play. It was quick. It was convenient. I actually really liked the show floor this year. And the only problem is that it was so small that some of the bigger companies like Sony and Nintendo and EA didn't have enough kiosks to show all their games.
Well,
so they
Nintendo
had, like, different games on the floor than they did up in the meeting room. And so there were some companies we went to and we were asking, like, where is this game? And they said, that's only on the floor. So we had to actually go down there to play it. They just didn't have enough room to put all their games because they had more games than they had space. It wasn't as much of a problem for Nintendo because they only had, like, five games to show.
Right. But
for some of the other ones, they had, like, rotating games and stuff. It became a little tricky to play the specific game that you wanted to. But other than that, I love the show floor. I spent more time there than I expected to just because it was so convenient and easy to play stuff.
Well, you know,
but you also have to understand, on the show floor, the companies are limited. They're only allowed to have a certain amount of space on the show floor. They didn't want people to, you know, show how big their dicks were, basically, and have the monster booths that, you might miss that.
I don't want
those companies.
8-foot tall character statues. I just wish there were more game kiosks. I kind of wish they would do exactly the same thing, but move it to, say, like West Hall, which is bigger, and just give each company twice as much space.
But
so
the
that
problem
they could
is,
do more games.
The reason why they, you know, and the reason why the companies shied away from what they did back in the day was because of the fact that there were, out of the 60,000 people that were there, there were only a minute amount of people that those companies who really needed to be there. You know, the EV clerk, you know, that works weekends just to go to E3 does not need to be there.
Right. And that part of E3 is dramatically improved.
And when people like people journalists that actually are credible that need to get to appointments have to, like, weed through and try to get through those crowds just to get to appointments. I mean, shit, I don't know how many appointments, you know, you guys, you know, I remember back doing PGC and stuff, you know, I'd be late for appointments because just trying to get to an appointment to get through all those people was a total bitch. And, like,
constantly walking the entire length of the convention center just to get to appointments.
So for, like
you would walk 20 miles in a day.
So for a cost-effective, you know, for those companies to do what they did, yes, and trust me, dude, I love the old E3. Like, I love the glitz and I love the over the topness. And that's the one thing that these companies also miss is the fact that spectacle also gets bigger headlines in, like, CNN. You see it on NBC. You see it in USA Today. And you don't see that shit anymore. And that's, you know, and as far as, like, the future of E3, I hate to say it, but I think we will sort of see, we will be going back to what we used to have, but it's going to be a little different. And I think they're going to model it after how Leipzig is. And I've gone to Leipzig for the last couple of years, and Leipzig is even bigger and has even more people than Tokyo Game Show or E3 used to have. And they have a public, the public area where they do have those over-the-top booths, and they have the booth babes, and they have the giant statues and all that crazy shit, and just, like, mobs of people. But then what they also have is they have one separate hall that's called the Business Center. And you can't even get in there unless you have the right badge. And that's where you go do your behind-closed-doors meetings. You go and you meet with the developers. You can go get your private demos and all that stuff. It's quiet. You can actually...
So it's like the best of both worlds.
It's perfect. And the thing that's awesome about Leipzig is they charge the public. It's open to the public. Yeah. So the booth space isn't as expensive and as an extreme to the developers. And that's the thing with the problem with the old E3 was that, you know, the booth space, not only was expensive to rent out those massive things, but then everybody would try to one-up each other. You know, you had EA with the 360-degree HD screens and, like, you know, bands on certain stages and, like, and all that
Sting,
shit.
Sting versus somebody in a frickin' wrestling match. You remember that?
Yeah. Mr. T and Vin Diesel. And
that was
I'm
ridiculous.
Trying to remember what publisher it was that generated all the complaints back in 06 because their audio system was so goddamn loud.
That was
NCSoft.
NCSoft
had a band.
Oh, yeah, that's
and then,
it. Yeah. And people were complaining to the organizers, yes.
I used to wear earplugs in South Hall because it hurt my ear. It actually was painful.
I think the most telling thing about E3 this year is that the California Gift Association rented out more of the convention center than the ESA did.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I mean,
yeah, but I think I have a different perspective on it than Billy because I didn't get to go to all these pre-E3 press events. Some of the other people on staff went to a couple of them. But for me, all the games there were fresh. I hadn't played any of them. And so it was really exciting for me. And I didn't so much mind the lack of, like, really big news announcements because these were just games I wanted to play and hadn't got to play yet. And for me, the format was great, especially because we were working with a much smaller crew, and so it made it possible to actually play all the games, even though we had like a third or a fourth of the staff that we used to, because the format was so much more efficient. And we had almost back-to-back meetings on a couple of the days, and even then, because the meetings were so close together, we could say, okay, we only need two people here, so we'll send you off back to the booth, back to the show floor, play those Sega games that weren't up in the meeting room, etc. And we were basically able to divide and conquer, and we could actually cover everything because it was close together, it was quiet, you could get your work done, you could play what you needed to play. So for me, this was excellent. Like, I would be more than happy if they did E3 again next year the exactly same way. I think the one thing they probably should do is move it up a month back to June, because I think May was probably too early for most companies, for most studios' development cycles who are trying to get games out in November. And I think July is so late that all the games have already been revealed by other means and at other events. So I think maybe June might be the sweet spot.
Yep,
but
I would
other
agree,
than that,
totally.
Yeah, other than that, I wouldn't change it. But maybe my needs are different than the needs of the companies and other people. But I was really happy with it this year. I'm not going to make a prediction as to whether E3 will actually continue to exist, but I would like for it to. I mean, if they did it the same way next year, I might actually consider going back, even though I've said this was my last E3. I had so much fun, and we got so much work done, and it was such a pleasant experience, more pleasant than the old way, you know, just a lot less hassle.
The only other thing I wish
I would be happy to go back.
I would suggest they would change is during Wednesday or show floor open Tuesday. So Tuesday, you know, the Nintendo press conference is going on, and then everybody went to Sony, and the show floor is open. Like, people could book appointments and everything like that, but everybody's at the press conferences.
Yeah, I heard it was like crickets chirping in the convention center
that
morning.
It's so stupid. Like,
they should have put that stuff the day before. They should have all three of the big three press conferences the day before E3 on the same day, so you can just go from one to the other to the other, and then E3 is E3, and you don't have to deal with all that shit. I'm not a fan of the press conferences during the show.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And that shit was going on Tuesday and Wednesday, and it was just like, I'd never, and this is the same shit happened last year too. I didn't go to one third party press conference that was going on during the show because
they're
lame. You know, the blogs really can cover that shit, and you know, like, you know, then you have train wrecks like what happened at Konami and like
Capcom talking about their friggin' Lost Planet movie and not even showing any games.
So fine, yeah. Do something separate.
If I go back next year, I will not be going to any of those because they're worthless.
Yeah, just do something separate. I'm totally cool with that, and keep that shit out of there, and just let everybody have 3 days at the show the way it should be, and keep the press conference separate. Outside of that, you know, it will be back. It's not dead. E3 will not go away. At least it won't go away.
E3 still does get headlines. I mean, it may not be as big of a deal as it used to be, but they do still get a lot of exposure. You still got, like, G4 nonstop coverage. You've got articles on the front page of Yahoo about it. All the local papers, the LA Times and stuff like that, they're all covering it pretty extensively. So it's still a big deal, and the world still knows it's going on.
But to put that in perspective, in 06, there was a 30-minute piece on NPR, for God's sakes, about E3.
I'm sure it was awful too.
Oh, actually, it was pretty well done.
Some of NPR's gaming pieces, and
the people they had on though were media, gaming media. So.
Okay.
Yeah, they were informative, but they did, you know, explain what was going on to their broader audience.
Yeah. It does need to make a bigger splash, though. I mean, this is you know, May used to be the time of the year where this industry really shined across the globe.
Balls out.
I think if they move it earlier in the calendar, it will make a bigger splash just by virtue of the timing, I think.
Well, that it's got to look better on camera too. You know, E3 does not look good on camera right now,
boring.
It looks boring as shit.
I went to an academic conference 2 weeks before E3, and it was pretty much the same thing. It was people walking around in badges going to meetings.
Yeah.
You know.
And I mean, not just that, looking at looking at video of just the conference floor, because I've never been, sadly, I was bored. I was like, oh my God, why is this video even posted online? Nothing's going on.
Oh, the like show floor?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no spectacle whatsoever. That's why I liked it.
No, not even like, that. There was just no one there. I mean, the video, there was like a random people just milling about.
Oh, that might have been Monday morning. I mean, it never got crowded, but there were people at most of the kiosks by the last day. But I don't know. I mean, you know, this was my 8th E3, and the first 2 or 3 years I went, the whole thing blew me away. I was in heaven, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 or 3 years, like 2005 and 2006 especially, it made me sick to my stomach. Like, I loved being there, but it was getting to the point where I went there to hang out with my friends from the staff and to cover the press conferences, but like the actual show, I pretty much despised it because
it got so tiring.
It's so exhausting. It's so loud. It's so obnoxious. Yeah. It's so cynical. You know, it's like, you know, if we give you this teddy bear, you'll play our game and tell your friends about it. I mean, that shit, listening to people give these really fake-sounding presentations on it, you know, trying to get information out of this person demoing the game who's never played it until 2 days earlier because they've just paid to be there, that stuff really started to grate on me, and it got to where I didn't really look forward to the show anymore. Like, I went there because it was part of the job and because, you know, it was just a tradition. But this E3, I actually had fun. I actually enjoyed it. It's kind of like, it felt more grown up and adult and relaxed and just a better working environment. It was kind of what I wanted E3 to become anyway. So, obviously,
I enjoyed it. If it goes the 07 route, though, it's dead. They can't do
it. Oh, 07 was clearly a disaster. And I knew when they announced that it wasn't going to work. But I think bringing it back to a central location, to a familiar location, made a huge difference. I really, and Wendy went to both, and he said it was night and day. He said this year was so much better than last year.
Totally. Last year was hell.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So I'm glad I skipped that one. Anyway, guys, it's been a long show, so we got to wrap up. I definitely want to thank Billy for coming in and telling us all about this stuff. And just want to say to the rest of the crew, I'm glad to be back, and it's good to hear your voices and talk to you again. And my traveling is done, so I'll be here week on week. So.
Yeah, so much for an hour, more. Jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I only went I only doubled the length. These guys their last episode went 6 times longer than they originally expected. So proportionally, I've done a lot better job of keeping the time in check.
No, only 2.5 times the length.
It still had probably similar fat and great and more Nintendo stuff, so I'll take that high ground.
We also had 5 people on the show. You guys had 3, so, and we came out to the same length. So yes, I'm a better host. Okay, everybody, thanks.
Nintendo, Nintendo.
The greatest host who's never here, Jonathan.
Nintendo.
Metz.
Hey, I'm back, man. I just got finished saying that. I'm back. So anyway, send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We really want to hear what you thought of everything. We've gotten a few, but not really enough to put together a mailbag. So maybe next week we'll jump back into that, do some news or whatever. That's all. Until then, we'll see you next week.
Later.
Later.
Cue the hippie music.
Yes.
Johnny, I was just making fun of Lindemann's haircut and said that he looked like fucking Powder in his little video thing that he did.
Oh, yeah. He's gotten a lot of shit for that.
It scared me.
I couldn't believe he posted that, because I was like, I've never seen John. I wonder what it looks like. Oh, my God.
Yeah. One of the many dangers of exposing your physical appearance on the internet.
Amen.
Nah. Well, wait until you guys see the video that Chiron took of me singing Tangled Up in Blue in the Rock Band 2 demo room.
Oh, dear God.
Yep. It's like 8 minutes long.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, yeah.